The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Good morning and welcome to OTB AM on this Friday morning. Just gotten 7:30. Hope you're well. Owen, how are you getting on?
Very well.
What's happening?
Not much now. What about you?
Very little. Just recovering from a tooth, if I'm being perfectly honest.
It's just taking the bright lights in the studio to allow me to recognise that you're dressed up to the nines this morning. What's with the blazer, sweater, shirt combo?
It's not actually a blazer, but I mean, thanks for your input. Nevertheless, on
the dinner jacket.
Suit jacket. What's with that? I just decided I should start making more of an effort of a Friday.
Well, thank you very much.
Keep the side up, really, is the thing.
On behalf of all of us who can see you, thank you very much.
Anyway, back to my tooth.
It's sore, is it?
I had, without being overly dramatic or detailed about this, I had had a filling about a month ago. It was grand for about 3 weeks. And then for about a period of 10 days, was the pain dial was getting slowly and slowly turned up. So I'd been to the dentist once. They said, listen, just give it a bit of time to settle down, go off. Gave it about 5 or 6 days and had to go back. And was very open to the idea at that point that whatever it took to sort of end the pain, it was that sort of pain where you were never, you were just constantly distracted by it.
It's dark, isn't it?
Dark. So I went in and the dentist said, listen, you know, the way we work nowadays, here are the options. You make the choice. Like, I much rather it where it was...
They tell you.
It just tells what to do, like. And
she said, what choice did you make?
Extraction.
Oh, God, you've got a tooth taken out?
Yeah.
Right, this is big news.
Massive news.
Is that your first tooth being removed as a...
As an adult,
yeah. As an adult, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tough
going. And I wasn't in any way prepared for what was to come. Like, you get the needles in various directions to numb your mouth, including the one, which I think is maybe the most horrific procedure that, regardless of what condition you have, you can get done, the injection up into the top, the roof of your mouth.
But it's only for, obviously, a split second.
It's grim as all hell on. Even the thought of it brings a tear to my eye. But it obviously serves its purpose. And I wasn't fully sure then afterwards because, like, effectively, they are getting a pliers and literally clawing the tooth from your head. So I wasn't sure if that was going
to... Did you stay awake during the process?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, yeah. As in, was I knocked out by drugs?
Yeah.
No, just local anaesthetic.
We're lucky to have you here.
Very lucky to have me on.
I don't know how you managed to do it. That's your true war story.
I wasn't sure if, because I haven't had it done so long, if it was going to be like this sort of full-on foot on your head as they try to extract the tooth or exactly how that was going to work.
They just, like, clamp your head in place, I think, nowadays.
That's pretty much it. And then put their foot on your head. Mm-hmm. And yeah. But yeah, no, there's a lot of sort of pulling and dragging, and out it comes. And happily, in my case, very easily. But
so anyway, one tooth lighter this Friday morning.
Yeah.
Good to have you with us, God. If only I had known, it could have been
a
shaky week.
Just glad to be here, on. It was like such a brush with mortality.
It really was. Gosh, you know. But you're looking better for it.
Thanks. Anything dramatic in your life this week that our audience should know about?
Absolutely not, no. But I'll try and up my game.
You had a quiet weekend of sport last weekend, didn't you?
Yes, I did, actually. Yeah. So I guess turning that around a small bit this weekend.
What are you doing?
I'll be working tomorrow night and then working Sunday. So very, very exciting weekend in store.
What's the plan on Sunday? Can our audience expect some Owen Shane goodness coming their way Sunday night?
They can expect content on Sunday for sure, yeah. So I'm presenting the Sunday show on Sunday, which is the show that happens on Sunday. So that's what's happening this weekend.
Content coming your way. Right, in case you are just awake and haven't seen very much of what's been going on overnight, here's a bit of a flavour from the golf to begin with. It's all going on at the WGC Mexico Championship. Obviously, Rory McIlroy, after his comments earlier in the week, leading after the opening round there, 6 under par, 65 for him, 2 clear of Bubba Watson and Justin Thomas. In the football, Manchester United came from behind, excuse me, to draw 1-1. in Bruges in the first leg of their Europa League final, Europa League last 32 tie in Belgium. Lacazette struck late for Arsenal, a 1-0 win away at Olympiacos. An excellent game, Owen, you were telling us earlier on.
Europa League is shite, and I used to think that it was so good. Like, he kind of took the foot off the gas in terms of quality come Thursday night, but often if the quality dips, you can have just an upshoot in excitement. But watching,
it'll get a bit better from now is the thing, like a lot of the dross.
Watching Manchester United and Arsenal playing the Europa League back to back is just not a. It is. It's like watching Liam Gallagher solo and Noel Gallagher solo, and you can see how their talents have waned throughout the years. And this is actually you start getting wistful for yesteryear.
Jesus.
When you watch them.
Oasis in the Europa League.
The last 15 minutes from Arsenal were pretty good, and obviously Anthony Martial was good in fits and starts. But 70% of what you watched last night, and I'm sure plenty of people did the games back to back as well.
Yeah, and all the Wolves fans.
Well, see, the Wolves, like, really, I wish I actually had that on. I know Stephen Doyle was actually doing commentary on Wolves Espanyol, and you have a team here that looks perfectly poised to go all the way into Europa League, which I don't think is overstating things.
They do
whatsoever.
Until they get beaten, is what happens with these things. But Ruben Neves, what a goal. Did you see it?
Absolutely savage.
Oh, God, incredible. Anyway, 4-0 win for them against what admittedly was a second-string Espanyol side. Fraser Forster saved a penalty. Celtic drew 1-1 with Copenhagen in Copenhagen, and Rangers came from 2-0 down to beat Braga by 3-2 at Ibrox, so very much still alive for them. Here, Shamrock Rovers are at home against Cork City in the SSE Electricity Premier tonight. That's the only one underway at 8. Dundalk up against Shelburne. Elsewhere for you, just in rugby finally, 9, Scannel is going to captain Munster tonight. Their Pro 14 game away to Zebre. And Leinster have James Lowe in their back three for their trip to the Ospreys. So that's the Pro 14. That's what's been happening in the world of sport overnight. We do want to, and for today, we do want to hear from you over the course of the morning. So if you've any texts or comments, do get them coming into us. 7:37 on this Friday morning, wherever it is you are getting busy to get about your day. We do want to hear from you. We're delighted to have you along with us here on OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. Here's what's coming up, and it's a packed show between now and 9:30. We're going to tell you what's happening on the back pages of the newspapers in just a few moments' time. Some interesting stories there. Ronan O'Gara is going to join us on the line, and man with an interesting record at Twickenham as we prepare to take on England. On their home patch is going to join us in just a few minutes' time to get it stuck into all of that. Our top five stories of the morning coming your way just after 8 o'clock. Gary Breen previews the weekend of Premier League, and no doubt will reflect on some of that Champions League and Europa League action as well over the course of the last few days. Alan Quinlan is going to be live on the line just before 9 o'clock this morning. Not in studio with us, we'll be live on Skype just before 9. Richard's Rugger Thing coming your way just after 9 o'clock. Owen Shane manages to escape his grasp this week. And Joe Malloy is there in his stead. And also, the very latest in our Swim for a Mile challenge. Just exactly how our own, myself and Tommy getting on. We'll let you know about that at about 9:15. So that's a bit of a sense of what's happening on the show this morning. Do get in contact with us right now. Time for the papers. OTB AM. All right. You can check out on offtheball.com, by the way, as well. I should mention that all our very latest good stuff is up there, and some good pieces up there again this morning. So do go along and check out. You'll have all the very latest in breaking news and all the other activity too that's happened over the last couple of days, as well as all our very best bits from whether it's OTB AM or the evening show from 7 o'clock in News Talk as well of an evening. Do head along there and check out all of that. But it is time to get stuck into what's happening across the back pages for you. The Irish Independent is where we're going to start. That's a look at offtheball.com. Eddie Jones is a story that dominates a lot of the back pages this morning, and you can check out that full story up on offtheball.com. The Irish Independent, England coach Jones, sorry for sparking racism, reporter outrights Daniel Schofield here. Galway top of the turnstiles as GAA take in €60 million in 2019. This is an uptick of about €36 million in gate receipts for the GAA in 2019, spurred, as Colm Keyes writes, by a ticket price increase and All-Ireland football final replay, obviously, and bigger average attendances as well. So on the up very much from a GAA point of view, and an interesting story inside from Duncan Boyle as well. Gaza had his issues, but he had a heart of gold. This is, as I said, that story from Duncan Boyle there. As he bids to guide Meath under-20s past Dublin manager Ger Robinson looks back in his sporting life less ordinary. It's the Irish Independent.
The Irish Daily Mail this morning is Eddie's misery. England coach lands himself in race turmoil while Martial saves the day for Ole. There he is celebrating his goal against Club Brugge yesterday.
The Irish Times, meanwhile, rugby all the way here, as you would expect, pre-Six Nations weekend. Healy's hunger for the battle is undiminished by the years, writes Jerry Thornley here. The thoughts too of Liam Toland, who talks about the possession game and the need to shut England down around the fringes as well in his column today, looking ahead to that. And England apologises for what's described here by Sean Ingle as a bizarre half-Asian remark.
The Irish Daily Star goes with Ole's a ball boy. Solskjaer blames ball as Martial saves Reds. Lennon hails heroic Fraser. Meanwhile, he saluted here Fraser Forster after the keeper's crucial penalty save kept Celtic in pole position to make the last 16 of the Europa League. And Potter won't slam four. Brighton boss Graham Potter says four of his players made bad decisions after being videoed inhaling substance from a balloon in the club's winter camp. So this is Shane Duffy, Pascal Gross, Leandro Trossard and Yacan Baksh, they face an internal punishment after footage of their antics in Spain emerged online. So if you're a footballer on a winter break and you haven't inhaled something from a balloon, are you really on winter break is the question.
I know nothing about this or whether this is a... Like,
all I know is that Arsenal did it. Raheem Sterling was linked with this.
Right.
I know I'm referring to this as if like Kippy Crack is a football club that he's linked to. But I don't know. Is it always a little bit of a... I know there's always horror stories that do the rounds of this sort of stuff. But
yeah. I know nothing about it, so let's maybe not make an informed... point about it. The Irish Examiner, meanwhile, this morning, lovely photograph here, obviously one of the key talking points this week, and what's been a pretty, I have to admit, for me at least, low-key build-up to what is a massive game in the calendar. Family values, winning mentality is woven into the Farrell DNA. Andy and Owen there, obviously, at the Six Nations press launch a number of weeks back, ahead of the big game this weekend, and plenty inside there as well in relation to the rugby and lots more.
Back page of the Herald today is, away goal suits United. Solskjaer relieved to escape Belgium after subpar display. You've also got a headline there from Fraser Forster's penalty save against Copenhagen last night. And Werner is happy to be linked with Poel. RB Leipzig striker Timo Werner says he is proud to be linked with a potential move to Premier League leaders Liverpool. That's right up there with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer saying he's proud that Manchester City fielded a strong team against him. Timo Werner proud to be linked to football club. And Dubs must move the ball quicker, says Kieran Whelan, writing on the inside of the Herald this morning.
Did Solskjaer say that?
Yeah, do you not remember that?
No.
In the Carabao Cup game,
wow.
When they got trounced 3-1, he was like, well, at least they played a full-strength team. I am paraphrasing.
You're paraphrasing.
But no, I'm not paraphrasing too much. I'm not truncating his comments overly. He did say they did put out a strong team, and he used that as a source of pride.
It's a career highlight almost.
Yeah, I can't believe you missed this. It was definitely the biggest trough that Manchester United fans would imagine have had all season.
There's so little to discuss about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you know, it's like... The Irish Sun this morning, blush goalie. Romero has shocker, but United escape. This was Club Brugge 1, Manchester United 1, and it was a pretty shocking error, you would have to say, from the goalkeeper there as well. And plenty more reaction to last night's Europa League as well.
Daily Telegraph this morning goes with Martial Law. French striker gives United advantage with poacher's goal. Eddie Jones, meanwhile, apologising after a sparking racism row. England coach involved in bad-tempered exchange over half-Asian people. And Danson Vow, head injury victim, to donate brain to medical research. And a bit on Tyson Fury as well. Tyson's legacy, Fury fighting for more than titles. Interesting how this is a much bigger thing, or so it seems, in the United States of America. But I guess they put in so much cash into this fight, especially when you kind of view it through the prism of ESPN. We'll get into that a little bit in our top five stories.
Like everything about Tyson Fury, obviously, speaks to the heart of a nation that love a bit of pomp and sort of hyperbole about their sport. So easy to see why that's the case. The Guardian for you this morning. England coach drops a clanger. Jones apologises for bizarre half-Asian remark to reporter, writes Sean Ingle here. Seeing Rouge French say that Wales Jones lacks respect for the nation. So it's all on. At least one game is all on this weekend ahead of France-Wales. And also Lacazette helps Arteta's youngsters handle the heat as they win at Olympiacos.
Diogo Jota there, pictured on the back page of the London Times this morning. Another Jota treble for Wolves. The main story, though, is Jones forced to apologise for a race claim. Row adds to pressure on England head coach. Meanwhile, Martin Ziegler is reporting on another financial story, Paris Saint-Germain's Chiefs bribery deal. So their president agreed to pay FIFA a substantial sum of money as part of a settlement that led to the world governing body dropping a bribery complaint, according to sources. The sum was expected to be in the region of 1 million Swiss francs and is said to have formed part of an amicable agreement between FIFA and Nasser Al Khelaifi, a Qatari businessman, and meant that Swiss prosecutors dropped their 3-year investigation into the complaint. So interesting stuff from Martin Ziegler there. And then there's also a cricket story, England shunning 4-day tests.
The Irish Mirror this morning, Lennon Hale's hero phrase. This is our phrase after their win last night, 1-1 at Copenhagen. Ball buster, more reactions to the Europa League last night. Ole blames the ball as Martial spares United's blushes. And Tyson Fury is going to net himself £31 million if he, a career best purse at that, for his rematch with Deontay Wilder this weekend.
A bright new dawn is the headline on the front of the Racing Post this morning. Welfare and safety, the key elements in 5-year plan described as a pivotal moment for racing. So this comes from the Horse Welfare Board with new recommendations for the welfare of the horse there. So that's big news in racing. And then back page of the Racing Post is ready to rumble. Rooney's Rams can continue resurgence against Fulham. It's Derby against Fulham tonight, and it's a 7:45 kickoff.
All right, that's pretty much it from us on the newspapers feed this morning. It's 7:45. We've a lot of rugby coming your way this morning. Alan Quinlan, a little bit later on, is going to preview the weekend Six Nations, as always, on Friday. But Ronan O'Gara is going to join us in just a couple of moments' time. I know it to be AM here. But first, let's take a listen back to Brian O'Driscoll on the show yesterday morning. Here he is on the issue of pre-match nerves. Brian discussing his motivation in trying to loosen Ronan O'Gara up on the team bus.
We did a great piece with Peter Mahoney last year in the build-up to the World Cup. Himself and Alan Quinlan were talking with Adrian Barry, and he talked about being paralysed almost by the pressure of the Six Nations games. That, you know, the night before in the Shelburne, you're there, and the stress was so high. And, you know, you put that together with the World Cup review, where News 4 talked about the psychology being wrong, and maybe we built up the pressure too much, which he had a hand in by saying that anything less than a semi-final was failure, by the way. And I just wonder about that pressure. Is that inevitable? These games are so big. There is so much riding on it. It's going to be intense pressure, the biggest pressure of your life.
Yeah, it is. I think it is. You know, there's, I'm sure there are other situations, obviously, that are more life and death.
In real life, you know, yes.
In real life.
Yeah.
But you know, from a career perspective, it's a different sort of pressure that we're on. And it's, you know, people would argue that it's no bigger or smaller than their situations of, you know, trying to hold down a job where you're on the breadline, where
100%
you've got bills to pay. So, you know, it's relative to you as an individual, and maybe the pressures that you feel because you're in the public domain, because, you know, on a Saturday you're going to be judged by your performances by people watching at home, then you're going to be judged in the paper on the Sunday by journalists, and then on Monday you're going to be judged a third time by your coaches and your peers as to what your performance was like. So that's a lot of scrutiny to deal with. And that's why some people, it's not for them. Some people come and go, and dips in form aren't just solely about the physical aspect, it's about the mental of not being able to deal with that as well. And that's why the mentally tough athletes, irrespective of their ability, physical ability, tend to go the course longer than anyone else.
Yeah.
Because they're able to stay in the fight, and because they're able to convince themselves that that's the environment that they belong in.
He clearly is one of those guys who can do that, because obviously, you know, the Lions captain has come back from the setback of being dropped from the team. But I do wonder, like, how do you get loose? How does the team get loose ahead of this game? Like, how does he use that the night before? And how does everybody else make sure that there's no kind of contagion from him? Or if there is, it's a positive thing.
I think everyone's feeling their own pressures as well. It might not, you know, that's an individual thing to him. I'm sure some guys are very relaxed, or some guys on the facade look very relaxed, but inside they're crying. So it's you don't fully know about how different individuals are. And, you know, you could see it. I used to always love, and I've talked before about the bus journey to internationals, where at the start, you know, a couple of people were wearing headphones. By the end, nearly everyone was. And that was particularly, I used to just have a chat with Raj, because he was someone that never listened to music, but he'd be very focused, and you could see the nervousness on his face going, and I was just trying to have a laugh, because that was about expending my own nervous energy, and he'd be telling me to piss off and stop annoying him. But you know, as much as I thought it would break his nervousness a bit, but also selfishly, yeah, it was about me trying to put myself at ease. And then, you know, when Raj went, I had to, you know, stop Rob Kearney from wearing earphones, because I needed someone to talk to. I was like, I can't be the only quiet guy on the bus here. You know, there's plenty of time for seriousness when we get to the ground.
Ronan O'Gara, good morning to you.
Hi, how are you guys?
We have to give you a right to reply there.
No, great memories. I actually can remember it like yesterday. Leaving the captain's meeting, either walking down the... it was originally the Berkeley Court, then it became the Shelburne we moved to. And at that stage, we had all our seats. I was second from the back. The back seat were the normal heads, and Brian was behind me. And it was absolute torture. I just absolutely hated him, because he was just, well, it's interesting to hear his aspect on it. You know, as you say, players are so selfish, and they need to be, because they have to get their preparation right, and all that matters is them. But now that you're kind of in the coaching world, you see it from a a collective point of view. But yeah, Brian was just, do you know how he was able, he actually was able to burst out laughing, where I was kind of like, no, I've got to be serious. But he's probably more the New Zealand model where, you know, 4 minutes or 4 hours before a final or a semi-final, there's boys whipping down tracksuit pants and sticking their foot in and messing, and different rules for different folks, different strokes, as they say, different strokes for different folks. And everyone prepares differently, but it's, all that really matters is how you perform on the pitch. But we were probably brought up on the be serious, and you have to be serious for days, but I don't necessarily think that's the right approach.
Why do you think that? Why do you think you had that difference, Ronan? Was it in terms of the culture that Brian was brought up in, as opposed to yours, or was it just natural personalities?
No, I suppose it was a major weakness of mine, in the fact that I struggled with the kind of, in terms of the individual sport outlook I had in terms of the kicking. I could completely understand why people would be like that, because they had a game that they could kind of enjoy. But I beat myself up over the fact that I put the responsibility, and I like that too. I don't want this to be a negative. I kind of warped my mind into thinking that the 14 others that played, they don't really have a direct influence on the game in that regard. But for me, I have to be getting kind of between 10 to 20 points every game. It's my responsibility. I remember Neil Jenkins told me a great quote, no one, about in Wales when, you know, people don't thank the postman. So they don't thank Neil Jenkins, because Neil Jenkins is expected to kick the ball over the bar, same as the postman when they get letters. And it changed my mindset in goal kicking. You know, he was talking himself in a third term person about Nilo. When Nilo does the business, no one thanks him, but Nilo is expected to kick the ball over the bar, and that's what his job was, and that's exactly what my job was. But I think in the mentality of where we were, and there was a lot of David and Goliath stories when we were first coming on the scene, and, you know, I mean, how lucky we are to be playing for Ireland or playing for Munster, but that isn't necessarily the case. Well, why wouldn't we be playing and winning for Munster? Times have changed, thankfully, and the mindsets have changed, and the visions have changed. So, I suppose that Lions tour, it was kind of like the perception has changed for everyone playing professional rugby in Ireland, and the reality is, Owen, if you wanted to be looked upon as one of the best, you have to be hitting really high percentages as a kicker. But that tormented me, but I wouldn't change it. I loved it, and I needed that. But at the start, it was, wow, as those journeys, you compare that to the 30 minutes you get your teammates after a victory, compared to the emotions going to a game, it was horrendous.
Yeah, you're watching OTBAM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball, live every weekday morning from 7:30. We're in conversation with Ronan O'Gara ahead of a big weekend of Six Nations rugby. Obviously, all of this conversation kicked off from a chat we had with Peter O'Mahony last year about his levels of nervousness. Ronan, I wondered, sort of, he had spoken about sort of being in the hotel beforehand and how the nerves and the stress would sort of overtake him to a degree. The practical manifestation of that, Brian talks there about the nervousness being obvious in your face. What was the levels of it, or when would it kick in, or can you talk to us a little bit about how all of that would unfold on match day?
On match day, well, it's well before match day.
Match day,
there's a glimmer of hope, because you know that you're only, whatever, 8 hours away from kickoff, and all you got to do is kind of, it starts with an early rise, obviously. You can't really sleep with excitement. And then the first challenge is trying to get a breakfast into you. But big days, it gets into you, but you're usually running for a number two. sorry, people are
good. Listen,
enjoy their breakfast. I feel like it's nearly lunchtime over here. But it was, you know, I think you look at, I suppose, it's very different now, and so much isn't that different, because, but it was, you know, I think the great thing about that was the stories, because you've, you know, I mean, John Hayes, you've Claw, you've Golov, you've people like that, that essentially they gave you your grounding because they were the people that came before you. So some great characters in the Munster pack and in the Irish pack starting off, but it all evolves and it's continuously evolving. And you look upon now the roles of sports psychologists and mentors and mental skills coaches in the game. And I think people are, our players nowadays are very well prepared, but it's very hard, I think, when something means so much to you to put a value on that. And I think that's the anomaly of sport nowadays, is that your inner self-worth or your inner self-drive is very, very difficult to sum up to people, even in your family, because they sometimes don't understand what this means to you. Because I get it, it's a professional sport, but there's certain things that don't change, Adrian, that you, playing for your country is a massive deal. And you look at the boys this weekend, and they're in camp now, and it's Friday before Sunday, Ireland and England, and yes, the game's professional, but it's still a hell of an occasion and something that you should be getting knots in your stomach about. If you do not have a knot in your stomach on Sunday morning, there's something wrong with you. I get you that you're really well prepared, but I think the feeling of knowing that you have a few million people behind you willing you to victory should weigh heavily on your shoulders.
This occasion, specifically the trip to Twickenham, your own record, do you know what it is?
No idea.
Six games. What was
we
the
won half of them, did we?
Yeah, half and half.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Exactly. But like that's, and that's, you know, I think that's, it's the same as everything in sport and everything in rugby. Like once you do something once, you should be doing it more often. But you look at kind of where we were coming from, I would say the record before that was pretty grim. But sport, so much of it is convincing yourself beforehand that you're going to do it. Mm. Now there's a track there. It was the same as when, Munster won European Cups. Other teams knew that in Ireland, especially Leinster, well, if they can do it, we should really be doing it. So I think, yes, belief is huge, but also, in Twickenham, as a rugby player, once you kind of arrive there and you run out, if you don't get excited about playing in Twickenham, there's a screw loose in your head. It's a fantastic ground. It's an all kind of, it's very different to Millennium. There's kind of, you get a great feel of kind of old traditional values when you play in Twickenham in a massive, vast stadium, while the Millennium Stadium is on you. It's high and it's close and it's kind of a condensation feeling, while with England you get massive feeling of kind of grandeur and vastness and a great old traditional stadium with the chance of swing low bellowing from the crowd. But that motivates you in a great way, because you know what I mean, the Ireland supporters will be hard, but England will be at least, you know what I mean, three or four times as many of them, so they'll have the great support. But that was always, I think, a massive carrot of teams I played into. I think we always kind of said, yeah, we're at Thomond Park. This result will take care of itself. But I think it was when you played in away venues that really was a measure of where you were, probably as a man, firstly, but secondly, as a rugby player.
But what can Ireland do this weekend, Ronan, to shut that crowd up fairly early in the game?
Well, it's a bit of a silly answer, but I think controlling the ball and controlling the tempo will be key this weekend. You look at what happened in the Aviva in the game. Obviously, they probably tilted a lot of the balance, or they sapped an awful lot of the confidence. Was a kind of England kicked long, Conor Murray kicked out, and England had a plan to an overthrow. And within two phases, was it Johnny May scoring in the left-hand corner? And ever since then, they owned that game and they owned Six Nations. I think even though it's only two games and we're at it probably an interesting stage in the fact we've won two home games, but this will be a big, big step up for anyone thinking it isn't. I'd say they're misplaced. England at home, I think their first time there since the World Cup final. It'll be a real, real test, and it'll be a test for 80 minutes because England will test Ireland in areas that Wales and Scotland weren't capable of testing them, especially in collisions. And you can say, oh, yeah, the two Vin opponents aren't playing, but they have, I think, a series of threats throughout the park, and that's what England do well. They are able to play with them their game, and but they're also able to have a very effective kicking game, but they're also able to carry hard. And I wouldn't appreciate what carrying hard looks like at Twickenham.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, one of the difficulties with analysing the game is it's hard to know what true England team actually we have on the basis of what we've seen so far. It's hard to know exactly where they're at.
Well, their selection is interesting, yeah, and obviously we don't have that at the minute, but I think if they go Farrell to a laggy Slade, that's a dangerous midfield. I think that's their best midfield. I'm a fan of Ford, but I think Ford is brilliant when he has big ball carriers ahead of him and he gets the front foot. But also, he looks probably better maybe than he should have against a New Zealand defence that was porous, surprisingly porous, but also very ineffective in attack in a semi-final.
Can I ask you just on that one, Ronan, and we are short of the team selection, but the forward point, not being a fan, are they best served with that selection? Are they best served effectively with Farrell not at out half and having both on the pitch?
I think there's merit in both, I think, Adrian. I think you would go, for me, if you have Henshaw and Aki Bundy in the centre this week, you know, I think that's a power combination. So you could easily go whoever England... What I'm trying to say, sorry, is the Ringrose factor in terms of potential beating on an outside break. So I would say Ireland will be direct with Henshaw and Bundiaki for the first 50 minutes. But you look what England did for the semi-final or the quarter-final against Australia. They didn't start forward, and it was a big move, or it was a good move, because you have you know, the three really power runners from Australia that play in their midfield. So no, I think for me, you know, not that I'm, but what Eddie Jones potentially could do, he could go 50 minutes of Farrell to Alagi and Slade, and then for the last 30, when teams are a little bit more tired, you bring in the kind of first and second receivers, a double ball player, and you go forward Farrell.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we'll see how that pans out over the next while. Ronan, we didn't want to let you go, and I know you've written about it in the Irish Examiner this morning. A very sad week for Munster rugby, for the club, and for everybody around it as well, with the passing of Gareth Fitzgerald, Mr. Munster, by all accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a great man, and sometimes we're all very keen to praise people when they pass away, but it would be very accurate in this regard, I think. Gareth Fitzgerald was a man who, I suppose, brought Munster from really humble beginnings to a world class brand. And it's hard, I suppose, because people ask me what your thoughts on it, and you know, I think when you're in that kind of bubble of professional sport, he was always there, and every journey we went on, every big occasion, Garrett was there. But I never looked upon him as a guy that was had a big title. He was very, very unassuming, a very decent man, and a great family man. And it's just very, very sad. We knew he was unwell a year or two ago, probably 2 years ago, and the prognosis wasn't good. But you don't, you try and keep hope. And, you know, all my memories of Munster rugby, of the great days, Gareth was there. It's just a really sad day for Anya and his family. And essentially, may he rest in peace.
Yeah, we'd echo those comments, Ronan. You've been very good with your time. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for the talk.
Ronan O'Gara there on the line from La Rochelle, obviously. Right, we have lots more to come. We're going to discuss a little bit more rugby later on. Alan Quinlan's going to join us on the line to look ahead to that weekend of Six Nations Rugby, get into a bit more detail about Ireland-England as well. So do get your thoughts if you've any on that game. If you've got a match prediction or question you want to put to Quinny, do get those into us. We'll bring those a little bit later on. Gary Breen is going to look ahead to the weekend's Premier League and reflect as well on the weekend of European football. So all that is to come. Hashtag OTBAM if you want to get your comments into us. Or just leave, drop a comment wherever it is you're watching us this morning. It's 8:05. It's Owen and Adrian with you. Gary Breen, Quinny, both joining us before 9 o'clock. But we're back with the top five stories of the morning after these. OTB AM. 8:06 on this Friday morning. Here's our top five picks of the morning for you. We're going to get stuck into Eddie Jones's and pretty much all of the back pages this morning, the comments that he had to make at the press conference yesterday ahead of the Ireland game. The Europa League was in action last night, and Owen Shane watched every single match in the Europa League last night and was wowed by it all. So we're going to get full match reviews in all of those games in just a couple of moments' time. Fury Wilder, obviously, is one of the big events, if not the biggest event, in the world of sport and the planet this weekend. You can get the considered thoughts of Andy Lee, by the way, up on offtheball.com for that, but we'll have a little bit of a chat about that shortly. Dan Toohey, the former Ireland forwards, retired in interesting fashion. We'll bring you his comments as well in just a couple of moments' time. And Richard Dunn says that Liverpool need to change their style of play, so we'll bring you all the details on that in just a few moments' time. But the Eddie Jones story was where we wanted to begin, because it is on most of the pages, back pages this morning, and generally the tone of it is that Eddie has made a massive misstep here, is generally the tone, I think, of the reporting. It's fair enough to say. One of the pieces that we picked out, Eddie's Misery, on the Irish Daily Mail for you this morning, the writing of Chris Foy, who would be a very regular reporter on the rugby beat, England coach lands himself in race turmoil, is the headline here. I guess there are two elements to it, Owen, in terms of this story. The perceived racist slight by the reporter who had asked him a question. Effectively, it was about she had said to him,
do we want to hear the audio?
We can.
We may as well just play it and actually hear what happened.
And just as a slight sidebar, it's been very pertinent in the media this week. I don't know if you have been following the death of Caroline Flack. There's been a lot of talk on about the power of social media and how we all need to be nicer to each other. Now, in particular, I was wondering, when it came to you looking after England players and their mental health, what you are doing in that area to make sure they are well looked after and perhaps not so affected by everyone in this room.
That's a very interesting question. Obviously, read and listened to some stuff on the girl and feel sorry for her family and thoughts with the family. In terms of our players, we try to take a balanced approach. Obviously, social media is an important part of today's society. For some players, it's massively important. For other players, it's not important. So again, it's more of an individual way of looking after each player as well as we can.
For you personally, you've talked before about your meditation. Are you still doing that, and how does it help you?
I don't think I've ever spoken about meditation. You must be thinking about someone else. Okay. Maybe another half Asian person.
I don't think so.
Maybe we all look the same.
Yeah, so you can hear the comments there from Eddie Jones at the press conference yesterday. And as I mentioned, there are two elements to it. There's a perceived slight from the reporter who felt that he was calling her out as being racist, and she sought an apology post that press conference, which was delivered, as I understand, in person from Eddie Jones. The RFU also releasing a press release yesterday to say that Eddie Jones doesn't stand over these comments. And then the second aspect of it as to whether it's a racist remark or not, which is not for certainly me as a white Irish person to decide on that one way or the other. You have to listen to the audio yourself, I guess, and make up your own mind. It does feel, however, in the coverage of it this morning, that there is an element of a pylon. Eddie Jones is a very divisive character, and the coverage of him tends to be reflective of that, that he tends with great regularity to say things that are divisive. But as I said, it does feel as if the coverage of the story this morning is a bit of a pylon, from particularly coming from the English media. And as I said, I have picked out this particular piece from Chris Foy. You heard the audio there yourself. The piece here begins that Eddie Jones found himself caught up in a fresh controversy yesterday after making a bizarre race-related outburst, writes Chris Foy. England's head coach was forced to apologise to a reporter for saying, "Maybe all half-Asian people look the same to you." Now, you've heard the audio there yourself, and actually words are very important in this context, and that is a misquote of what he said. I'm not saying that the same misquote is printed in all of the other newspapers, and what I can see, it seems to be reported accurately, although the pylon is consistent. But this is just a misquote, and it's for me indicative of the attitude to stories like this. There's a nuance to it. Eddie Jones is speaking about his own ethnicity here is the other thing, and that's why I feel utterly unqualified to make any comment on whether that element of it is offensive or not. I understand the reporter's desire to have everybody understand that she's her comments, her question was not coming from a racist place and that he needed to come out and clarify that. But this stuff particularly, words are really important. And to misquote something so significant when it was a general point that they have now made very personal to her, which actually just didn't happen. They've included words that didn't exist. That's the danger with this stuff. And people frequently talk about the badness of social media and how things get churned up and misreported. And but here we are in print. Mm. It's not a good look.
No, I think it's fair to say that Eddie Jones was in maybe a strange mood in the press conference yesterday. That's probably an odd response to a question. Probably as far as you'd go, isn't it? That's where it kind of begins and ends. Now, granted, I presume I'm in the vast majority of people here who are coming to this story with the full picture, that if we'd listened to this thing at the time, live on our televisions or whatever, and we probably would have walked away saying, well, that was kind of weird, and then gone about our day. And then to actually see others being an apology or this thing's been taken further probably would have raised eyebrows. Completely, however, accept your point that it is not our place to suggest what is or isn't offensive in this sort of situation. But certainly when I saw that this had become quite a big scenario and that Eddie Jones was apologising for suggesting overtures of racism, that I think that was rather odd, very, very strange thing. And, you know, we'll probably hold our hands up and say that if there was a boot that needed to be stuck into Eddie Jones, us in the Irish media might be the first people to actually do so. But on this occasion, I'm not quite sure. I think you can say that he was in a strange mood and it was a strange thing to say. But to actually try and batter him and say that we needed an apology to be forthcoming, I'm not sure about that. Now, granted, I don't know the specific situation with the journalist or if there has been or what her story is. So maybe I'm completely missing the point here.
I think there's two separate ones. I think that as that played out, it's probably fair enough that at some point she doesn't want it existing in the ether that he was saying that she was racist.
I guess that's fair enough. I kind of understand that.
And then there's a separate point about whether the comments were racist or not. And as I said, I don't feel particularly qualified to make a decision, a judgment on that sort of.
You're making the point about the whole coverage around this being, that is a very good point actually about the journalist, that you want to just clarify, say, listen, Eddie, I didn't actually mean that whatsoever, and that's a private conversation, and that's totally fair actually when you put it that way. But I guess you're right. It's the situation of then after all that's been kind of sorted and the dust has been settled, the whole sort of pointing fingers at Eddie saying this is a huge racism row. And
a lot of
like
white
that.
English people saying that, you know, this is, and Eddie Jones' ethnicity is that I think his dad is from Tasmania and his mom is from Japan. Like, that's his that is his ethnicity, and he's quite qualified to speak about it, obviously. One of the other aspects of it was the reporting around it. Look, I don't know. Maybe there's
he's taking the piss out of himself.
Yeah. The meditation point, right? He said that. He was asked about a lot of the reporting on this point, specifically this morning about the meditation, is quite sneery. So she said to him, oh, you mentioned in Japan about your meditation. And so the coverage this morning is that, oh, yeah, he did talk about his mindfulness when he was in Japan. So he spoke about mindfulness, not about meditation. And I think that was the root of his response. I didn't talk about meditation. He didn't go on to say, no, what I was talking about was mindfulness. But that was the distinction. And a lot of the commentary of it this morning is, oh, no, but he did talk about this thing in Japan.
Yeah, he's obviously being pedantic. And I think people can be pedantic right back at him. I think that maybe Eddie Jones is sneering at himself as much as anybody else in this sort of situation. And I think that perhaps if we'd actually, again, if we'd seen this and it was actually happening right in front of us and we walked away from that press conference, if we were in the room, we were like, well, that was weird.
Yeah.
Full stop sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the story would have begun and ended for me.
Yeah, no, it's been a bit mad, and it's quite a nuanced conversation that people feel the need to rush in and make sort of what they would consider to be greatly informed views on it. So anyway, look, at before we wander into uninformed hyperbole on our own.
That is a danger.
Yeah, so that's that story. You can, there's plenty of it out there this morning if you want to go and bring yourself up to speed where exactly that's at. That was that story. The Ireland, funny, the Ireland-England build-up I have felt on to be a little bit underwhelming, actually.
Tame.
Yeah, isn't it?
Very tame.
Like, that's, I was sort of pointed the finger over at the Alan Wynne-Jones comments about the French being cheating at the breakdown. That's what you need, a bit of that.
You kind of almost want to talk more about that game because of the fact that there's been a bit of needle.
He slighted the nation. France have told us that they've slighted the nation.
I guess there's probably a sort of situation where Eddie Jones has been stung in the first week with his comments about France, and it's blowing up in his face a little bit, so he probably didn't want to have a pop off Ireland this week.
Doesn't normally tend to deter him with...
Not generally. Maybe he just needs a few more weeks. There was also the situation, obviously, with the we hate them and they hate us sort of situation with Scotland. Maybe there, I don't know what's been said privately. Maybe there has just been an instruction from the media people and maybe from the coaching staff in England just to dial it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's get one big win. Let's hammer a team and then let's go back to the
Hopefully
way we are. So I think that's indicative. I think, however, what we are going to get is from Andy Farrell is something like this week where everything is hit with a straight bat, but he's not going to stir the pot at all. Now, I'm not saying Joe Schmidt ever did that, but he often threw in a bit of spice whenever required, whether it was towards a referee, whether it was towards a technical aspect of the opposition. I'm sure that can serve a competitive advantage, and Farrell will do it whenever required, but I think the norm is something like this week. Andy Farrell just, holding counsel on certain points, and maybe this week is just a bit more sensitive for Andy Farrell because there's such an easy grenade to throw in there with his son on the opposition team.
Do you know, the one aspect of that I felt we could have had more of was questioning of Andy Farrell about his son on a technical level. Do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like quite a fatherly conversation, and it felt like his responses were also quite fatherly. But he was never, maybe it exists somewhere, I haven't seen it, poked and prodded about the how we get at him and his, like, it's a great opportunity to get some, to get him to talk about his, be analytical about his son publicly, which I would have been fascinated by. But
because when Andy Farrell gets analytical in press conferences, that's actually the best version of him. Like, he's obviously got a wealth of knowledge about the game, I think that goes without saying. But whenever journalists tend to ask him about specific aspects of defence, whenever he was defence coach, you always got these fascinating monologues and a great insight into rugby. So I'm sure the questions have been asked, and you know, there's probably an element of not wanting to unveil his game plan at the same time, because if you're going to talk about the technical aspects of number 10, you're probably going to let slip what you plan to do to stop the opposition 10. So as Ireland head coach, I don't think he's probably going to reveal too much.
Before you get into an in-depth analysis of every single game that happened in the Europa League this week, which I know that a lot of our audience have already been in touch, so they're very much looking forward to.
I can do like a BBC sort of Sporting 3, Istanbul 1, and I can just go through all the scores.
All right, that's not what we're after at all. It's like a full-on opinion piece here on this. You know that's what we're after. I mean, it might be every game, or it might be two of them. We'll get to that in a minute. The Fury Wilder fight, obviously, has got a massive amount of attention, rightly so, I think, over the last while. If you haven't seen, one of the most informed pieces that I've certainly heard or watched this week was Andy Lee on with Joe. Might have been on Tuesday night. It was like a really brilliant insight, as always, from Andy. I was actually surprised that he was so open, unless this is all a great wild bluff about the tactics of Tyson Fury. But the openness of how he needed to and has changed his game plan for this time around, has to constantly have his eyes open, have that sort of subconscious reaction to the punches when they inevitably come in a way that he didn't with the first fight. But an interesting piece that you, I think, were interested in from Kevin Mitchell.
Kevin Mitchell is, I guess the headline is Memories of the Greatest. Fury needs to channel Ali with his feet, not his mouth. And Gypsy King's much-type clash with Deontay Wilder has the potential to be one of the sport's better rematches. And I think it's probably the sub-headline, which is true, that this is the potential to be one of the best fights we've seen. The first fight was incredible and was one of the best fights we've seen in the heavyweight division. But equating it to Memories of the Greatest, I wonder if we're just getting ahead of ourselves a little bit too much. Now, this isn't Kevin Mitchell going on a solo run here. This is from Fury's comments this week, saying, "This, me and Wilder, is going to be the biggest fight since 1971, since the last time two undefeated heavyweight champions fought each other. That was Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier in 1971. So it's taken a while, nearly 50 years, to get another massive fight like that. So I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to put on a fantastic show, and we're setting the world on fire. That's for sure." Completely accept the point about the the nature of there being a big fat zero on both of their records, and that of course increases the stakes, and this adds to the kind of appeal of what's going to happen on Saturday night. But I don't think two undefeated fighters automatically pushes it ahead of all the fantastic heavyweight fights that have happened down through the years. And I actually just want to change my word fantastic there to hyped heavyweight fights, because 1971 obviously is Ali Frazier won. Like, you've got the Trilla in Manila a few years after that. I would automatically put that up there as something that is going to go down no matter what this rivalry brings. Fair. Even if these guys fight 10 more times and they're all the 10 best fights we've ever seen, I don't think the lore of Ali will ever be surpassed by this rivalry. But then, like, you get into even the era post Ali, like, you obviously had Holmes going up against Ken Norton. Perhaps this surpasses something like that. But then you get into the more contemporary fighters like Holyfield and Tyson then. And really, if you look through some of the 90s fights, like, or the multiple fights really between Holyfield and Tyson, Frank Bruno and Tyson, you've got Lennox Lewis versus Tyson. Granted, this is only one man here, but I don't think this rivalry will be met with the same sort of appetite as anything that came in the Mike Tyson era. Now, it's changing a small bit now that you've got ESPN obviously all over this thing. But you don't still have a huge profile. I don't want to say a huge profile. You're still coming into this fight with two growing profiles in the United States. And if you look at the British media coverage as well, it's not making the main story on the back pages all this week. Maybe it will tomorrow morning. Maybe it will come Monday when they have a fantastic knockout picture or something like that. And maybe if there is a substantial winner here, there will become a sort of hero status for Fury if he's the winner, and that'll be the case in Britain, or a hero status for Wilder if he's the case, and it'll be made of him in the United States. I do think it's growing, but I think it's just a little bit too soon to say this is the biggest heavyweight fight since
Tyson Fury,
Ali Frazier won.
Gets to say that. I think he
gets the hype it that way.
He gets the hype it. That's fine. Did you see his suit yesterday?
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Thing last night,
phenomenal.
You big dosser.
Oh yeah,
with the what was the one he?
I can't remember. It's
FU was the one or something like that he had worn at the previous one. There was definitely the F bomb was lobbed in there somewhere. Was that the previous Wilder fight or was that another one?
There's good prop bets on whether or not Tyson Fury will wear his hood up or down at the weekend, whether or not Deontay Wilder will have that face mask on. You will get big odds on them not on having showing a bald head actually going into the ring on Saturday night. So get your money on if you feel confident that way.
Somebody's always got to go unless it's a draw again.
I was very trying to avoid that phrase as much as I possibly could have.
Say that,
but it's
as
true.
You can.
It's true. Somebody's O is going to disappear in the near future. They surely wouldn't do that to the fans again.
Yeah, definitely. Then the third fight nearly can start.
The interesting thing about when you kind of consider why maybe Wilder hasn't developed his profile on the same level as even Tyson Fury, I would contend. Is it something to do with the fact that he does have that O that he hasn't, other than the Tyson Fury fight, come perilously close to losing that? Whereas with Anthony Joshua and with Tyson Fury, and before I make this point, I accept that we are more open to the British media than we are to the US media here. So of course, Fury and Joshua have always been more in our consciousness. But they both came up against Vladimir Klitschko, and beating a Klitschko was a huge thing for their profile. Like the Wilder not beating a Klitschko, perhaps not beating Vladimir Klitschko, actually has that set him back a little bit in terms of his development on his profile level? I'm not sure. Maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. But I think that heavyweight boxing was just in such a boring state for a while when the brothers obviously had a vice-like grip on the whole thing, and when that was blown open, or the perception was blown open by Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury, granted it was an aging Vladimir Klitschko, I think that kind of created this image of the two of them that we were like, oh my God, this is different now. So I'm really excited for this on Saturday night, and I think it's definitely, the division is in its most exciting place so far this century, perhaps.
Yeah. And listen, heavyweight is always Hollywood as well. One last point on it before we move on, that when you consider how in so many ways eloquent Tyson Fury is in terms of his vocabulary and his capacity to communicate, it's really at times quite exceptional. And also the put-downs, right, that you hear in boxing so regularly, like the cutting personal put-downs that he was whispering in Wilder's ear in the drawn match, you big dosser. Seems like almost incredible. And was it dosser?
I would completely accept anybody's language failing them in the middle of a fight.
When you've just been decked to the ground.
Yeah, it's incredible actually that he managed to swing a punch, never mind actually whisper in his ear in the middle of a fight like that. When you take that clubbing arm from Deontay Wilder, I'd imagine your world becomes a very different
place.
It's
like something a 12-year-old would say, oh, you're a big dosser.
Maybe it's very offensive to Deontay Wilder. Maybe it worked.
T Don Under has been in touch to say that Rog is easily the best Irish rugby pundit. I'm sure he'd be delighted to hear that. And David O'Shaughnessy says that Jones' response to the reporter was poorly made. There was no reason for him to bring ethnicity into his response. Racist by Jones? Nope. In my opinion, stupid, very.
Yeah, stupid, maybe stupid, but weird, I think.
Yeah. Also a nod from Dara O'Toole on Ronan O'Gara's piece of the Irish Examiner podcast, paying tribute to Gareth Fitzgerald, is well worth checking out. So we're happy to do that. We still have plenty of more of those stories, including Owen's review. I know. People have been in touch. It's going to come. Don't worry. We'll bring it to before we leave you at 9:30. The full review of every single game of the Europa League last night, opinion, analysis, and all of the best stuff definitely coming your way. So bear with us on that. We'll be back to it a little bit later on. We're also going to talk to Gary Breen in just a couple of moments' time. John Giles was on Off the Ball last night, as he is always on Thursday evenings. He got stuck into this week's football. He paid tribute, of course, to the passing of Harry Gregg. You can listen to the full chat on Off the Ball on the Off the Ball podcast network, or you can watch it back on our YouTube channel as well. We'll get it into it with Gary Breen in just a moment. First, here's John on the tactics employed by Atletico Madrid against Liverpool.
But it's only the first leg, Johnny, you know?
Yeah, Liverpool has fancied their chance of scoring, obviously, a couple of goals, but it seemed preposterous that some people were criticising Atletico's style of play when, obviously, they did what they did to try and achieve a result, and 1-0 was a great result for them.
Who's that, Atletico?
Yeah.
What, criticising what, the way they played?
Yeah, so people were saying they obviously shut up shop and, you know, they didn't...
Yeah, well, what's wrong with that?
Absolutely.
you can't... I mean, mostly Liverpool supporters, I think Klopp alluded to it as well. You can't, if you're a manager of a team, you can't dictate how the other team does what they do, Johnny. They do their best to get a result, and they went on to win the match. So you can't ever complain, say, well, oh, that's not fair, I don't like the way they played, and that. I mean, if you go back to Liverpool alone, don't forget, in the Champions League final last year, they went the goal up after 2 minutes, and they shut up shop a bit against Spurs. You know, you can't ever dictate this is the way I want the opposition to play, or it's not fair the way they play. They play the way they have to. To get a result, as Liverpool would do if they needed to a result against a team that they had to defend against. Liverpool played well, I thought. I mean, they were unfortunate to lose a goal every after 4 minutes, but after that they performed pretty well. But these guys are no mugs. They're very, very hard to break down. And they'll be hard to break down at Anfield as well. But don't complain about it. You can't complain about how a team performs and how they do and do what they have to do to get a result.
Gary Breen, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys.
John has sort of hit the nail on the head there, hasn't he, in terms of the main narrative post that game. Jurgen Klopp not happy with Atletico's tactics. It works, so who cares, I suppose.
Exactly. I think, I mean... In an era now where offensive football is so prevalent, to see them go about their business, Atletico, and how disciplined, how organised, how well coached they are, it's something to behold, it really is. Bearing in mind, this isn't one of the best Atletico teams that we've seen, that they're having their struggles in La Liga. But to go up against the best attacking team in the world and deny them an opportunity of a strike on goal, I think it's only the second time since Klopp's been Liverpool manager, just shows you the quality of his work. And when you play against Liverpool, it's so important that you get that defensive structure in place, because they're so quick playing through the first Liverpool that as soon as anyone is even just a couple of yards out of position, they'll expose it. But you see Simeone on the sidelines. He actually makes Klopp look shy and retiring, doesn't he, in terms of his histrionics. But he's demanding, he's cajoling his players. He's literally conducting them. And I really enjoy it. And that's not just as an ex-defender, but when I think about the greatest ever defence is AC Milan's team led by Baresi, or Arsenal's brilliant back four with Tony Adams. I'm aware of just how much hard work and time on a coaching field you have to do to be able to execute that. And I think we see just how good a coach Simeone is.
Richard Dunn in the Herald this morning is talking about Liverpool, saying they've got only one way of playing. Klopp has always stood over the fact that he doesn't need a number 10 because they win the ball so high up the field, and the way they press makes that number 10 role irrelevant. But he says when you come up against a side like Atletico, who are really rigid, you're looking for someone like Philippe Coutinho to open that up, and Liverpool don't have that. So he's obviously not being overly critical on Liverpool. He says just that a minor tweak perhaps should be the consideration of somebody who can drop into that number 10 role. Is that too much of a seismic shift for a game at home, let's not forget, against Atletico?
Well, listen, I don't think Liverpool are going to change much in terms of what they do at Anfield. They've got a method that suits them, a template that's been so successful. And I think you add into the fact that Anfield, and it's been so interesting in terms of the fallout of that win, that Liverpool players are saying that the Atletico ones are celebrating as if they'd won the tie. The supporters obviously were in full voice. But it was interesting to hear Klopp and all those Liverpool players saying, OK, let's just see what it's like at Anfield. I can't wait for that game.
Yeah. Well, what happens with that, Gary? Like, is so initially you think, on the basis of what we've just been discussing, like same again from Atletico Madrid, but it's going to invite an onslaught, obviously. Whether that's sustainable for 90 minutes or not, who knows? But what do you expect the next time?
I don't expect it to be much different. I expect Liverpool to be a little bit better. It's been interesting, and I've heard a lot of people talking about the effect of this little winter break for Liverpool. They lost a little bit of momentum. I'm not convinced about that as such, bearing in mind that I think Klopp is well experienced in terms of dealing with that, in terms of all his time in Bundesliga where they have the winter break. Maybe the players have struggled to it, but they weren't at their brilliant best, Liverpool, there's no doubt. And I think at times when you see him, certainly at Anfield, I would expect them to be backfiring again. A couple of weeks' time, they'll even be sharper. So I don't think much will change. I think there's no way Simeone is going to rip up that game plan and think, let's go to Liverpool and attack. But I think he'll be aware of just how important that away goal potentially could be.
Yeah, from Liverpool's point of view, like, it's at last we've got something to get our teeth stuck into. Like, it's been, the stories around, obviously with the Premier League for the last number of months, to be fair, have been so consistent in that Liverpool have just been blitzing everybody and are so far ahead in the league. Like, this makes it much more interesting. But the reaction from, you spoke about Diego Simeone there and the comparisons between him and Klopp on the sideline. The reaction now from Klopp himself and how he manages himself and how he manages this return leg, and obviously they have West Ham on Monday night as well. All of that now is suddenly much more interesting than it was this time 48 hours ago.
Well, listen, it is in terms of, you know, they've been comfortably dealing with the Premier League, even at times where the opposition in the Premier League look like they're going to get something, but Liverpool just see it out, really. But it wasn't a massive surprise that they lost there. Bearing in mind they've lost 7 of their last 11 away in the Champions League, so they're not that as good on their road in Europe. But this is a different. This will be totally different now. It's a one-off at Anfield. That whole stadium will be jumping. I think it won't be for the faint-hearted. And we talked about Liverpool coping at Atletico's brilliant new stadium, and even the Atletico owners. I don't know why they've said this. They said that Anfield's a tired old stadium. It needs repair. And you just think, why are you even saying things like that? But I genuinely believe it's going to be the tired around. I really do. I know we've got City, Real Madrid, but I think this one, with Atletico having that one goal lead to hang on to, I think it's going to be some tie.
It'll almost be deflating, I would think, for Liverpool fans because the expectations have now been set so high. It's a procession into the Premier League title either way. It'll almost be deflating run-in for them now if they are out of the Champions League at this point. But we'll see how all that manifests itself. Chelsea-Spurs, obviously, tomorrow, 12:30, Gary. An interesting week in the life of both of those clubs as well. I was interested to see what I would have felt, and maybe with no great surprise, a very defeatist attitude from Mourinho after the game during the week. A lot of it, I've had so many injured players, I've had so many half-fit players, and it's not stuff that's going away. Like, these players aren't coming back really anytime soon. Very defeatist from him, I felt.
Yeah, it was a little bit frustrating, really, that he's kind of reverted a bit to type. And his story or his analogy, whatever you call it, about the stairs, it weren't a particularly catchy one, was it? It took ages to get his point across. And it's not as if he has to tell us. We know that he's got injury problems. And this is the frustration, is that you kind of think, well, listen, OK, you haven't got Harry Kane, you haven't got Son, who have got you so many of your goals, I think 33 between them. But there's other teams who are competing up and around that Champions League spots. Look at Sheffield United. They had a centre forward all season who gets some goals, and yet they're getting on with the job. And you just think, come on, you know, it is frustrating, but this is a massive game. There's no doubt about it. I think Chelsea have really spluttered recently in terms of Frank Lampard and his debut season as a Premier League manager. Started well, looked like they were comfortably going to get that fourth spot, but literally have just, the wheels have fallen off, it seems. And I know he's addressed what he feels is the biggest problem in terms of their lack of creativity, signing Ziyech for next season from Ajax. But the biggest problem for Chelsea is that they have got a physical presence in midfield, and their two centre-halves are just not at a standard you normally associate with Chelsea. So as much as they might want to go forward, they look so vulnerable. And I think Mourinho will look at that. He'll be frustrated that he doesn't have Son, Harry Kane to expose it, but I'm sure he'll find a plan. But that is a massive game, because if that's a draw, Sheffield United have an opportunity then to win at home to Brighton to go fourth in the Premier League with just over 11 games to go. It is an amazing achievement by Chris Wilder.
It's incredible. Mourinho will obviously be desperate to win this game tomorrow. One last one on that, and we are we get very focused on obviously the Irish players that are playing the Premier League, particularly when there's the prospect of a striker of the age of Troy Parrott. But it isn't just us. Chris Waddle had things to say during the week about he felt that actually this is a guy that should have played. Mourinho talks afterwards about it's like going to a gunfight without a bullet.
Yeah.
Like failing to acknowledge that he did have a bullet if he wanted to put that bullet on the bench, but chooses not to. What's it all about?
I don't know. It's frustrating, isn't it? It really is. Especially, obviously, we've got our Irish hats on, and we desperately want him to get an opportunity because we know from what we've seen certainly and what we've heard that this is a player who is going to play at the highest level. But he needs an opportunity because that can pass him by if he doesn't get the right development. You'd have thought under Mourinho, in a situation now where they haven't got an out and out forward, that they would have him in and around and just give an opportunity. And I think as a young player, more than anything, you just want an opportunity. And sometimes you could argue that they don't warrant it. But how many times over the years have we seen that young player get that chance and build on it? So this is what we're hoping. But he must surely be on the bench for this weekend.
It's pretty clear he needs to go on loan, I think, Gary, isn't it? Because if Jose's going to see it out until the end of next season. Like, is there a particular level that you would be shooting at if you were the agent for Troy Parrott?
Well, I was asked this question a few weeks back. And you think about certain teams in the Championship. Obviously, I'd said at the time, the likes of Bristol City in terms of how they've developed young players. Tammy Abraham goes there, gets an opportunity to score regularly, builds his confidence, obviously comes back then to Chelsea. And you think it's maybe one of those type of stepping stones. But I agree with you. And I genuinely believe that young players have to play first team football. I've said it so often. You have to play with their pressures associated with it, the fact that it's for points, that it matters, not reserve league or any whatever they're calling these youth leagues these days. You just don't get the education you need. And for a player of his ability, bearing in mind what he's shown so far, I think he desperately needs first team football.
It was interesting the other night as well. Everybody saw Dele Alli's reaction to getting subbed off. Jose Mourinho said that was frustration with his own performance rather than any frustration with being substituted at the time. Is there a situation here now where the jury is still out on Dele Alli? Because it seemed like, right, he's back. He's not getting off this bandwagon again once Jose came in and his form started to take an upward shoot.
Yeah, well, listen, in that criticism that he was getting, it was quite high profile at the time, wasn't it, in terms of the likes of Roy Keane, Souness, them type of guys. But no, none of them ever said that the difficulties he'd had with three hamstring injuries, which changes everything, how you run, takes such a long time to get back, have that confidence. And suddenly Mourinho comes into Tottenham, puts his arm around him, and you're thinking, OK, it's really going to start happening for him. And it did look like an upturn in form. But I think that was a frustration that he just didn't play particularly well. And at a time when he would have known that he'd have been needed, bearing in mind Son, Harry Kane weren't there. So he's obviously looking to step up to the plate, didn't play well. But it was cutting in terms of Mourinho saying, listen, his frustration shouldn't be with me, or he didn't believe it was. Should be with himself, because he said the team actually got better when he went off. So I don't expect that to be a massive fallout. I think they'll deal with it. I think Dele Alli, for a young player, still has that little bit of petulance that he, by his own admission, needs to keep an eye on. But I think what is noticeable, and even on the flip side of that, Owen, and you all know, is Arteta's reaction to Guendouzi doing something similar, not training particularly well, banishing him from the first team at the weekend. He obviously came back last night. And that's what you want to see, strong management, where players don't have the opportunity to do that. If you've got a problem as a player, go and knock on the manager's door and have it face to face. Without the glare of the cameras, without the show in front of your teammates, the supporters, just speak man to man with a manager and to settle it that way.
Yeah, the Alli thing, I think you're right, it was petulant. And I do think it was in relation to Mourinho. I think it's slightly disingenuous of Mourinho to suggest otherwise. And actually just accept it. He was reacting to me taking him off and he was pissed off about it. But like, that's it. We'll have it out. We'll get on and on we go, as opposed to coming up with something that sort of reflects, or he certainly thinks reflects better on himself. That's Chelsea Spurs on Saturday at 12:30. Leicester, obviously, against Man City tomorrow night, Gary, is going to be fascinating. One, City obviously went behind at the Etihad in December, came back and won it 3-1. I've heard Brendan Rodgers saying subsequently that Leicester were too passive that night. Not a thing that you can get away with against Manchester City, but a fascinating game to look ahead to tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think it really is, in terms of, you think of the attributes that Leicester have, you think they can get at City. And I'd agree with that. I think they've been passive in a lot of the big games that I'd expect them, certainly when they went to Old Trafford against Chelsea and against Manchester City and obviously against Liverpool at home. You're thinking, OK, just set your team up in terms of how well you've been playing, play Maddison in that 10 area to really get on the ball, create problems and get that service into Vardy. But sometimes he plays him out wide and changes his game plan a little bit, Brendan Rodgers. So he might well say that his team were passive, but sometimes I think his team selection has been passive. And that is frustrating, because I know you have to adjust accordingly against the very best teams, because they can cut you open in a blink of an eye. But go after him, play to your strengths, and I hope that he does that tomorrow. I really do.
Yeah, Jamie Vardy needs to, like, it might be as simple as that, Gary. I don't know, in some ways, that he's... It was the last game. They've obviously had a couple of good draws after coming through a bit of a sticky patch. A couple of good draws against good sides. Vardy didn't have one shot in the last game, by all accounts. He hasn't scored in six games. Like, getting him, you talk about the tactics, circling it around him, albeit an ageing striker, would seem like option A.
Yeah. Well, and listen, in terms of an ageing striker, I know in terms of years he's getting on, but I don't think he's deteriorating at all. I think he might be even getting quicker. Bearing in mind how well he's looking after himself. We've heard the reports saying he's changed his diet. He's a bit more professional. But I think he's still a threat. I think, and I don't think he gets particularly downbeat about the lack of goals. I think he'll keep making those runs. And if you make those runs up against that City team, then you'll get in. I think he more often than not have to play on that right hand side, look after Fernandinho, because Laporte looks like he's put some real presence, as we expected. It's been a massive loss. Whether or not they play him, because I know they're going to manage him particularly well leading into that Real Madrid game. I don't think they can take any risk, because take him out of the team and they're a shadow of themselves.
I just wanted to ask you about Manchester United, Gary. They're up against Watford on Sunday, a game you'll hear live on Off the Ball. Harry Maguire's performance for Monday night has been heralded, so has Eric Bailly's. Now, Eric Bailly was on the bench last night, didn't get any game time, but they stuck with that back three. Harry Maguire looking fairly impressive again. Is this a sort of situation where he's going to continuously improve regardless of the people beside him in that back three, or do you really need Bailly in there to keep those clean sheets?
Well, I think as a centre-half, you want a regular partner so you can learn and adjust in terms of how you play as a collective. I think as a three, it probably does protect Harry Maguire more because of the fact that he's not particularly quick on the turn, or even though he doesn't get that exposed for a player who is quite cumbersome to look at, he reads the game very well. But you're right, even in terms of that Chelsea game, I mean, how he's not sent off there is beyond me, but... He's a key player, there's no doubt. Bailly comes back, gives you a bit more athleticism, certainly gives you physical presence that Lindelof doesn't have. And if you're thinking about going up against Watford and whoever it is, possibly be Troy Deeney again, Lindelof gets bullied so easily against those type of centre-forwards. I mean, I was commentating on that game where Watford beat Manchester United, and it was everything bad about Manchester United that day, that they just didn't look like they can break you down, was soft. I mean, De Gea gives away a ridiculous goal. But this is a massive game for him. And I know Harry Maguire said after those wins, certainly that win at Chelsea, that they have to build it against Watford. And they have to, because the games are running out now. And if you're to drop points again to the likes of Watford, you'll be in trouble. Having said that, I think Pearson's done a brilliant job since he's coming at Watford. So they'll fancy their chances.
Places 4 to 14 are maybe the most interesting area of the table. Like, it's almost surprising that about 10 points roughly kind of is the spread across all of those teams. And a couple of them you'll be watching on Sunday for us. Gary, what are your thoughts ahead of this one? How it's going to go, Arsenal-Everton?
Well, I'm really looking forward to that, because I've been so impressed in terms of what Arteta has done in a short space of time. Covering the game last week against Newcastle, and people say Newcastle not particularly good, but there was different setups in midfield, in that Ceballos was playing as the playmaker midfield, dropping deep, getting on the ball. It's just pushing Xhaka a little bit further forward in central midfield, and it worked well. So Bias on that right-hand side then gave Mustafi an easy pass, because you don't want him on the ball because he gives it away too often. So just give him a simple pass into midfield. But the fact that Xhaka pushed a bit more advanced on that left-hand side of centre midfield created space for David Luiz to step in and make passes. So the distance between your best players in your ball-playing players, certainly, Luiz, Sabaya, Xhaka, meant that Ozil got regular ball at 10, which meant he could get on a half turn and serve the likes of Aubameyang. So it does look good. There's a vulnerability out of possession. That's going to take a long time to address. In effect, I don't think that group of players can address it, but he's working brilliantly with what he's got so far, Arteta. But one of the real standouts has been Saka at left back, a young 18-year-old. He's been so impressive. Was against Newcastle, created the goal last night again. That's 9 assists for an 18-year-old from left-back, who's not actually a left-back. So that bodes well. Big future for him. The biggest frustration, certainly, and the biggest concern would be that he's only got 18 months left of his contract and he hasn't signed it. I think the bigger clubs will be looking for him.
Yeah. The only smile we got out of Owen all morning, Gary.
Yeah, well, listen, it's a long way back for Arsenal. It's a long road to redemption. It really is. But we've got a manager now who's got respect to the players and certainly got respect to the supporters in a way that Emery, for all his brilliant CV, in comparison to a rookie boss, didn't really have. And that bodes well for Arsenal. It seems that they're on the right path. But it's a long way to go and it needs a massive overhaul of that squad.
Gary, we'll talk to you on Sunday. Thanks a million.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, Gary Breen and Judy, for us for one of our two live Premier League games on Off the Ball on Sunday. That's Arsenal against Everton, and then we'll have Manchester United against Watford as well. That's Off the Ball live on Sunday from 1 o'clock right through until 7. You're very excited about Saka. And was that the... You're grinning? Was it related to something else?
No, not overly excited about Arsenal as a whole, but about Bukayo Saka. It's impossible to not be excited by him. He's incredible, actually. Every time he touches the ball, you're like, something is going to happen here. And brilliant going forward. Set up the goal last night, as he said. Nice little bit of interplay with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang on the left-hand side. Aubameyang, like, often Arteta so far has been slated for playing him out wide, but actually it's not the worst idea in the world, especially if Lacazette is going to get his touch back, because he was a man who was so low on confidence around Christmas, and he's scored in two games in a row now.
Yeah, he took that ball almost from the front row of the stand as well. Ryan Giggs-esque, wide, like...
Aubameyang.
Yeah.
It was, hugging the touchlines.
What Gary gives at one hand, oh, this unbelievable prospect, he removes straight away with the other hand, with the point that he's only got 18 months left to run.
Mm-hmm. And he's already been linked with himself and Martinelli, already been linked with the big boys. Yeah. Like, that's why Champions League participation is so important. Yeah. Not a top club anymore.
Top. 8:46 on this Friday morning. Glad to have you along with us. Plenty of comments coming in. And if you've got anything to get off your chest this morning, do get your comments into us on the hashtag OTBAM or whatever platform it is. You're watching or listening to us this morning. We're delighted to have you along with us. We've lots more to come. Alan Quinlan's going to be joining us to look ahead to Ireland, England this weekend. Tom Malone's in studio in just a minute to bring us up to speed with all the latest in the world of live sport as well. But Team 33 will air tonight on OTB Sports Radio from 9 o'clock, straight after Friday's Off the Ball show. And this week's episode, Enda Cole will be speaking to a Cork man who designed boots for some of the biggest stars in football. Here's Conor O'Brien on what it was like working with Puma.
That was fantastic. It was funny, actually. I was still setting up a presentation for him at the Arsenal training ground, and I was really in a rush, you know, because we had to set up the room and all of this other stuff, and my boss was there, tapped me on the shoulder. And, you know, I was almost finished. I was kind of turning around to be like, give us a chance, you know, like I'm almost finished the presentation. I turned around and it's Thierry Henry looking for a handshake. And all I could think of was like, is that the hand that the infamous handball? Whoa. Yeah, but it wasn't, but it was fantastic meeting him. Very sound guy, just very bizarre, just standing there with him in the room, you know, cool as a cucumber he is.
So what exactly were you doing with Henry at that stage? Were you helping him design a brand of items coming out?
He was just overlooking some of that because he was working with Arsenal at the time. We would do some prototyping with a lot of different clubs, and he was there at the time. So we wanted to get his early feedback on some of the design work, as well as, you know, the youngsters. It's kind of good to have a wide scope.
Do you think he gave him like a swift kick in the nads?
Just was like, never, you were never forgiving.
Listen, any Irish person who never forgive me, Thierry Henry, where there's no cameras around.
Yeah.
I think he'd be justified. Yeah. How are you, Tom?
I'm good, yeah.
Were you a boots aficionado?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think my favourite were the Ronaldo 98s, the Mercurials, Mercurial Vapors, those ones. They're one of the first Mercurial
Flashy,
Vapors.
Tom, I'm not going to lie to you.
They're not
Mercurial Vapors.
They're... No, I'm pretty sure they're Nike Mercurials that then before they became...
Oh, before the vapor. The vapor's the big
they
tick.
They added the vapor bit.
At that particular moment in time, they were flashy boots.
They were they're nothing now. I mean, you see some of the like...
Bog standard.
Balotelli colourways and stuff like that with Puma and things. It's nuts. Although I'll always have a soft spot for those Beckham Predators as well.
Nice. They're classy.
They're classy.
Vapors were like a hazard.
Why?
Because like you had GA people buying vapors, and they were obviously made... To be very thin on the top of your foot, so you'd come along on a wet Wednesday night, playing underage football, and a wet size 5 ball whacking it off a vapor, she'd break your foot off it.
Yeah,
you needed to be up to a World Cup or a Predator or an F50 for GA if you wanted to transition.
Well, I owned the first F50s that had like the kind of webbing at the back, and they had absolutely no protection. So I wore them playing rugby once. I would have ended up with a broken metatarsal.
It was the era of the broken metatarsal.
I'm not saying
it was that boot specifically, but
that was very current. Yeah,
you are.
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely.
No, I really haven't.
First time.
Yeah, well, let's start with continue the Nike theme. Rory McIlroy leads after round one of the WGC in Mexico. The countdown star carded a 6-under par round of 65. He's 2 shots clear of the field. Bubba Watson and Justin Thomas, the nearest pursuers there. And world number one, McIlroy has enjoyed the conditions in Mexico City.
I've always played well at altitude. I've played well in Kron over in Europe a few years. I finished second there last year. I obviously finished second here last year. I think I've got the altitude, you know, pretty figured out. I think I have a pretty good formula for it, and my I can hit the ball a long way here, which helps. And then, you know, my distance control's been pretty good. So that combined, and I'm not really guessing too much over things. Certainty goes a long way, especially on this place.
Yeah, McIlroy there uses old putter as well, which apparently helped. Meanwhile, in football, in the last 32 of the Europa League last night, Arsenal, Wolves and Rangers all won the first legs there. Tie while Manchester United and Celtic both drew away from home. United coming from behind turned that 1-1 draw with Bruges thanks to an equaliser from Anthony Martial. There was a late goal from Alexander Lacazette to give Arsenal the win against Olympiacos. Mikel Arteta says it was an important win against a good team.
What I knew is because I look at all the stats as well, how they've been performing at home in the last 2 years, and it's very impressive. So I knew it was going to be very tough. It will be a different game at the Emirates. Obviously, scoring away from home is very positive, but the tide is completely open.
There was a Diego Llota hat-trick for the second consecutive game in the competition as Wolves beat Espanyol by 4-0 at Molineux. And Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo said he was delighted with the victory.
I think it was a good performance, better in the second half. So first half, not so good. I think Espanyol created a lot of problems in possession. We didn't recover in the right areas. I think we adjust for the second half and beautiful goals. I think was good. It was a good evening, of course.
Rangers came from 2-0 down to beat Braga by 3-2 at Ibrox, while Edward was on target for Celtic in their 1-1 draw away to Copenhagen, where Fraser Foster saved a second-half penalty in that one as well. Of course, the return legs in all those games to be played next Thursday. Tonight, it's the second round of action in the SSE Airtricity Premier Division. Champions of Dundalk travel to Shelburne. Both teams, of course, 1-0 winners last week. Shamrock Rovers will also look to make it 2-2 when they host Cork City at the Talis Stadium. Derry go in search of a first win of the campaign when they host Finn Harps. Sligo Rovers, who lost to Harps last week, entertained St Pat's, while Waterford will look to make it 2-2 when Bows visit the RSC. And the First Division gets underway tonight as well. Cabinteely face Bray, Galway take on Athlone, and Wexford will play UCD. In rugby, Niall Scannell will captain Munster for the first time tonight in the Pro 12, that away game at Zebre. James Lowe is restored to the Leinster back three for their trip to Ospreys, and Connacht are at Murrayfield to face Edinburgh. All those games kick off at 7:35, while the Ireland under-20s will look to keep their Grand Slam push alight tonight there at Franklin's Gardens to take on England. That game gets underway at 7:45. Finally, in Gaelic Games, Clare to set up an Airgrid Munster under-20 football semi-final date with Cork last night. They breeze past Waterford in a scoreline 3-14 to 6 points in Milltown Malbay. Tonight, Leash face Kildare in the Leinster under-20 semi-finals, and in Ulster, Antrim take on Derry. Final, just one bit of breaking news, probably bad news from the Cheltenham Festival. The Gordon Elliott-trained Glenlow has been ruled out of the Kim Muir. So he's about a 9-2, 5-1 favourite. A lot of the kind of Shrewdies, you know, nap at the festival
really,
after a good
right?
run last year. So he, unfortunately, has been ruled out
What's
of the Kim
the story
Muir.
There?
I don't know, just Gordon Elliott's literally just tweeted there in the last couple of moments. Right. So he has been ruled out. But like I say, he was anti-post favourite, and I'm sure it will have messed up plenty of people's anti-post positions there as well.
Back to the drawing books, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for the time for that. By the way, we played a clip of Team 33, but earlier on there, you can check out the full thing. Full thing, Colin Buhig, and breaking down the load of boots in much more detail. So you can check all of that up on the Team 33 section at offtheball.com. Head along there for that. Kevin Dunhu on YouTube wondering, have I missed the rugby? You have missed part of it, Kevin, but all is not lost. We'd run a gar on a little bit earlier on. For his thoughts on all things Twickenham and plenty more as well, so you can check out. That'll be up on YouTube shortly, and Alan Quinlan is on the way in just a few moments' time, so that'll be ready for you in a few minutes. We'll get into all of that, but before all of that, Ireland's top-ranked heavyweight boxer Niall Kennedy discussed suicide awareness and his experience of bipolar earlier this week with Joe. It was on Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's a piece that's really worth listening back to. Again, you can check it out on the website. Niall is taking part in the Fight Against Suicide fundraiser. It's in Goree Boxing Club. It's on this weekend. You can get the full details available on headspacegoree.ie.
I mean, there's always that kind of impossible nature-nurture debate on whether your circumstances shape you more than your genetics or vice versa. Had you always been that way? Did you even feel as a kid something's off here, or does something happen along the way which sets you down that core, different path than the anger and the lashing out?
The anger, now I won't say it was a common thing. There would be very, like, I wouldn't, it would have been in matches as, you know, a frustration.
Opposed to walking down the street.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't a complete tug. But, look, done things that I wouldn't be proud of, you know, done things that I'm very ashamed of back then to people that I cared about. But, sort of to answer your question, it would be, it's manageable. Everything is manageable. And as I was growing up, if I was to probably describe myself, I would have been a very deep thinker. Do you know what I mean? I would have taken things very... I seemed to be made captain of most of the teams I'd ever play on because I took it so personally and took it so seriously. I could never understand anyone playing a match and not wanting to die to win. Do you know? So, looking back now, they were probably telltale signs then. You know, as a child, I was to shoulder the responsibility. I couldn't, even at 16, playing for Navena, playing senior hurling or senior football, I couldn't understand how grown men weren't willing to die to win a match. Like, you know, and it just, the balance, there was no balance there, you know. And so I'm just very lucky that I have that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Noel Kennedy in conversation with Joel during the week. He's taking part in the Fight Against Suicide fundraiser at St Gorey Boxing Club. It's on this weekend, and you can get all the details if you head along to headspacegorey.ie for much more on that. It is 8:56 on this Friday morning, wherever it is, if you're on your commute or wherever else. Delighted to have you with us. Do keep your comments flooding into us, and we'll put them to Quinny for you if you want to get in touch ahead of the weekend of Six Nations Rugby. Alan Quinlan, live from Limerick. Good morning to you.
Good morning, lads. How are you?
How are you getting on?
Good, thanks. Yeah, very good.
The game is actually, in some regards, hard to analyse on the basis that A, we don't have an England team, obviously, but B, we're not really sure where they're at. We've seen them play in fits and starts. What's your sense of post World Cup where England are at?
Yeah, we're not really sure where we're at, really. I suppose pessimistic after Scotland, optimistic after Wales, but England they were really poor against France. France were good, and I just thought. It was interesting. I had Jeremy Guscott on this morning on breakfast, on the breakfast show with News Talk, and he seemed to say, and it probably summed it up well, that they seemed to have lead in their boots in Paris. They just were very, very dead in their feet, and they couldn't get any continuity or any momentum going. And France, on the other hand, were full of energy, and they just defended incredibly well. And the game in Scotland then, I think, was better from England. They imposed themselves, which we know that's part of their motto and their plan. Whoever they play against, they try and be physically stronger than them. And usually when they win games, that's a telling factor. So we're not really sure. I think if you take the two Vunipola brothers out of the Saracens team, the England team, it does offer a glimmer of hope to anyone playing against them. They probably have Tuilagi back, which gives them real power and strength in midfield. So it's hard to know where they're at. I think historically after World Cups, teams who've been pretty successful and got to semi-finals and finals have struggled a little bit. Ireland probably have more of a cause to get back in track, players playing for their lives, playing for their futures in a green jersey. But this England side, you know, it's hard to know. There's still so many quality players in that team. You look at Atoje and Cruz, I think they're exceptional players. The back row, Hill and Curry, world class. If they get near any breakdown, they're just brilliant players. So they've a lot of devastating players. Johnny May is probably the best finisher in world rugby and has been for a couple of years. So they're still a very powerful side, but we're unsure where they're at really, and are they being affected by what happened at that World Cup? The incredible high in the semi-final and then the incredible downer in the final. It can have an effect.
Yeah, Andy Farrell is still obviously very much in the honeymoon period in every regard, and like he's doing his damnedest obviously at this point to put his stamp on it and make this group his group. And I guess in some regards the way that the last era finished to sort of separate one from the other, and in doing that he's had very high profile people in this week. Bono has been in, Quinny, I'm sure that didn't go past you this week. Maybe more interestingly, Paul O'Connell has been in and about the place. Just listening to what Andy Farrell had to say about him, the reasons he was in to take stock, to get a feel for the camp, to observe and to come to meetings, to share his experience and to try to connect with the boys. Like a list of things that you would think that actually if you were thinking about having him in, a little bit longer than short term. Like, there's a lot of language that he's used there that actually might point to a bit of a longer relationship here.
Yeah, look, I think if I was a player in that group, I think you're obviously, when you're trying to rebuild yourself and get a feel-good factor in the camp and put your own stamp on it, like Andy Farrell's doing, you know, I was in many Irish squads over the years when different people came in and you'd learn things from them. I think most notably for me was Padraig Harrington when he came in 2008, December 2008, before Ireland won a Grand Slam. I think he spoke about his experiences and what he'd achieved and how he went about that. And it's always interesting for other sports people to hear those stories. And that obviously had Padraig will probably claim that made the difference between Ireland winning a Grand Slam or not. But it was really incredible. You know, he had won majors in the year or two before that. And it was just incredible to hear him. Someone like Bono coming in, obviously, is going to, I think the boys were saying, and it's been in the press about just being proud to be Irish and stuff like that. And sometimes those things can make a little difference. Probably more significantly on the playing front, Paul O'Connell being around the group, because I love the shot in the papers of himself and James Ryan having a chat. And James Ryan is obviously, I think, a world-class player, and he's been so consistent for Ireland. But just having Paul around there talking about his experiences, about preparation. And interestingly, Ireland have only won once since 2010, and that was obviously 2 years ago. It's been, you know, it's a very tough place to go, Twickenham. And, you know, for this Irish team, you know, you talk about England having a bit of psychological scars. I'd rather be beaten in a World Cup final than being in Ireland's position, you know. So it's a challenge for him. You know, this is a real challenge. And I think it's probably completely flipped over that there's probably more pressure on England to win this game than Ireland, because there's probably a bit more pessimism since the World Cup. And, you know, last year, Eddie Jones talked about Ireland dealing with expectation. Even though they didn't win the World Cup, England, they're deemed at being right up at the top of the pile, really. And they probably have to carry a bit of expectation. And Eddie Jones is under a bit of pressure, and England are under pressure.
Will Paul O'Connell, is there a role there for him in the long term, Quinny?
The experience Paul has had as a player has been phenomenal, and his presence in the dressing room has always really felt in a positive way. He's just a natural leader, and that's well documented. I think it's different being a coach. There's some similarities as regards being a captain and dealing with players in dressing rooms, and Paul was very good at that. Obviously, coaching is there's a difference where you have the tracksuit on rather than putting on the gear and going out and acting and being able to make decisions out on the field and stuff like that. You're doing it from a different perspective. But I think he probably admit himself he'd like to get more experience coaching, expose himself to more coaching to take up a role with Ireland or with Munster or with one of the provinces. But there's always a role for having someone around with that kind of experience, because his presence alone lifts people and they can chat, and he's really he's probably more intrigued about what the Irish players are thinking themselves this week, and that's the kind of way he is. And he's probably shared lots of his own experiences of preparing and mentally being right going to Twickenham, and I think that was really interesting. And if Ireland win there, what would people say next week? You know, that these things had an effect, and sometimes it is a small little margins, but ultimately Ireland they've got to go out and improve again from what they did against Wales. And if they do that, they're in with a good chance.
Just very briefly, what is the areas that James Ryan will be looking to improve in his career over the next few years?
Well, if you look back at his performances over the last 2 years, there's not a lot more the guy can do sometimes on the field. I think probably just having more of a presence at line-out time and being someone who's really kind of dominant at making the calls. You learn, it takes time, no matter how good technically you are as a rugby player, to run a line-out like you've got to do and to get it to the level where Paul could walk into a line-out and just give reassurance to everybody by his actions, by what he said in the little huddle or as they're walking in. So the line-out calling is an area that I think Ireland need to get better at. And it's not just James Ryan. It's right across the board where Ian Henderson or whoever's in the back row, Peter O'Mahony, he's so good in the lineout. But just to give a little bit more assurance and their body language needs to be a little bit better. So, you know, you'd love to see James Ryan being that really dominant figure. And he will grow, and he's growing more and more as the years, you know, in the last couple of years. So that's one area that I'd love to see him be really imposing. Winning lineouts, backing himself as well, but also calling and running the lineout.
He's obviously gone with the same team again. Quinny resisted some temptation for change. We've spoken over the last number of weeks about how it is that Six Nations in the cycle where it might be tempting or easier in some regards to switch things up, but he's gone same again. Right call in your view?
Yeah, it is. I thought maybe that they may go back to the back row that was picked before Scotland and bring Doris straight back in. But it's a daunting task, you know, stepping in there for him, particularly when he played a couple of minutes against Scotland. I think Peter O'Mahony played well, very well against Wales. So I still think our back row have a point to prove. They were good, very good against Wales. But I think they need to take it to another level this week because Hill and Curry are just devastating. And they can, even if there is a bit of lead in some of the English players' boots, Curry and Underhill are just, they're all action. They're everywhere and they can cause opposition so much problem and get big turnovers. So the Irish back row have to carry this week, but they also have to make sure that Hill and Underhill don't get near the ball.
Ronan O'Gara making a case in the Irish Examiner this morning for getting for Keith Earls, effectively saying that Jacob Stockdale is not the player that he was. Like Stockdale himself, to be fair, this week saying that actually he's a better player now than he was in 2018. He's come on defensively. What's your view on our threat from those positions?
Yeah, I think he probably needs to do a little bit more. I think he's obviously been positive and he's a very, very talented player, a wonderful athlete. I just think he needs to use himself more. And I think it's not about making carries and scoring tries because people are scrutinising the amount of tries he has scored. He just burst onto the scene 2 years ago. It was incredible. But I just think the kick chase, I'd just like to see a little bit more anger or aggression from him. He's such a big man and I think he could use himself better. You know, if Conor Murray puts up box kicks on Sunday, he's got to be more aggressive in the air. He's got to just be really aggressive in the contest. And I just don't think he puts that fear in the opposition winger when the ball is up there. Some players are uber aggressive and that's a natural way to play. Jacob is probably a little bit more, he's not full-blooded like that. Incredibly talented, but I just need, that's an area where he needs to be a bit more imposing, just aggressively. And you just love to see him kind of run out over people rather than run around people. And if he does that, I think someone like Keith Earls is not obviously physically as big. He's a brilliant finisher and really electric. But I think the way Conway and Earls chase box kicks, I want to see Jacob Stockdale do the same.
Yeah, Conway was talking about that on the show last week, saying that he's actually learned to develop that as a skill, that he's obviously not the biggest man, not the biggest winger we've had, but he's had to teach himself that and work really hard at that. So you'd imagine if Stockdale perhaps did what Conway was doing in terms of his own self-development in this specific skill, he could be an absolutely amazing kick chaser because of the size of the man.
Yeah, for sure. That's it. And I tell you, on when I played and I played against Ulster, and if I stood in the backfield, which sometimes we would, one of the back rows would drops back there, and if Ruan Pienaar was putting up box kicks or whoever was scrum half at the time, Paul Marshall or whatever, I always think on the side that Andrew Trimble was on, you would be very, very conscious and mindful of the fact that even if you catch the ball, he's just going to smash you, or he's going to be diving through the air. He's just going to be straight in your face. And I think he was someone who kind of scared people. Conway's got so good at that. Dave Kearney is really good at it. Keith Earls has improved a lot over the years. And Keith Earls' form in the last couple of years, he's one player that's been consistently really, really good for Ireland. And if Jacob Stockdale gets to that level, think there was, and there probably still is, some creaks in the defensive side of things. But you know, he's 6'3". He's over 100 kilos, 105 kilos. He's the size of a back row, and He's incredibly quick. He's a brilliant finisher. He's got a brilliant left boot. So there's so many positives there, but I just think it's that little bit of energy, aggression without the ball that needs to be a little bit better. And if he does that on Sunday, he can, and going forward with Ireland, he can, there's no doubt he'll be on the team. But I think he's become vulnerable because those parts without the ball are where he needs to get better.
Will Ireland's Grand Slam 2020, Quinny, still be on track come Sunday evening?
I'm not sure. I'm afraid to get too optimistic, Adrian.
Go on.
I think they're in a better position, obviously, and there's a little bit more optimism. England are not as strong as they were at the World Cup. You take the Vunipolos out of the team and there's a little bit few kinks in the armour. I think Ireland will dare thereabouts. There's no doubt about it. But I just think maybe that England are probably, their desperation to get a result as well may just edge it for them. If Ireland start the game well and if they're anywhere near where they were 2 years ago with the intensity and the execution, they'll win the game. But that's the challenge. Will England allow that? So I think England will probably just nudge it. But I'm optimistic about Ireland running them very close or even being in the mix right up to the end.
Yeah, but England to get it done is what you're saying?
Probably. It's one of those ones that it's kind of I'm swaying a little bit on. And I don't want to go Ireland are going to win for just with the heart scenario. I just think logic would say even without the Vunipolos, England are probably that bit more composed and have that little bit of more power. But I do think that if Ireland create chances and take them early on, they could rattle England because I think England are vulnerable mentally as well. But it's going to take a massive effort. So I think England will probably just nudge it.
Yeah, all right. Enjoy the games.
Cheers.
Thanks, Alan. Alan Quinlan on the line there from Limerick ahead of the weekend's Six Nations games. What do you think?
I think England are going to win. I think it's not going to be as easy as, say, the last week's odds would have suggested. Was it a double-figure spread last week? I'm not sure. Maybe that's come in a little bit over the last week. I think I'm acutely aware that this is one of these classic weeks where our confidence has been building as the days have gone by. It happens on every big week. Of course, it's been proved right on many an occasion, say 2018, but it was proved badly wrong. I think confidence was building before the All Blacks game last year. I think confidence was building before, confidence was sky high before the start of the Six Nations last year, but then it kind of reached a low ebb and then kind of came back the week of the Wales game and it was kind of misplaced. Same though this year for the Wales game, so it's hard to know still where this team is at.
Yeah.
What I think will happen is that we will be satisfied that the team isn't fluctuating as wildly as it was at some point in 2019. It'll be a good performance, but England will win.
Our trajectory is kind of steadily like that, right? Like that's
well,
sort of,
2018 was like this, and then 2019 was just this.
It was a little bit of that, and then the World Cup a little bit, and then sort of flatlined a bit. But it does feel now as if there's a bit of a steady growth there, whereas with England, it's like, obviously, the greatest team of all time. Oh, shit, they got beaten in the World Cup final. Oh, no, they're actually dropping even further. Now, where exactly are they at? In the first half against France, you're like, all right, well, actually, they're way back up here.
So everybody's just become France.
A lot of uncertainty.
You never know which team is going to show up.
I think that's good for the Six Nations.
It's been a cracking tournament so far.
Yeah. All right. Plenty more of that on Monday morning. I'm sure Quinny will be back on. He picked through the bones of Ireland's great victory at Twickenham. And make a hems of Quinny's prediction, hopefully. So that's where we're going to leave the rugby for now. You can check out those full pieces with Ronan this morning and Alan Quinlan as well, all up on offtheball.com. Still to come, we're going to be discussing the very latest, bringing up to speed with, we still, of course, have to get to Owen's match reviews, the analysis from the Europa League last night. We will definitely get to that for you before we leave you at 9:30. We'll have a full, we might do a half an hour on that before 9:30 of Owen's opinion on the games last night. But before all of that, at 9:14 on this Friday morning, here is the very latest instalment of Richard's Rugger Thing.
Well, joining us now is somebody who doesn't have to worry about putting anything in his hair. Keith Wood, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Joe. Good hair banter.
Yes, indeed. You can't beat a bit of rugby hair bants. That's rugby banter in association with Head & Shoulders all-in-one shampoo and conditioner. Use your head and shoulder charge your way to new Head & Shoulders all-in-one for men.
Yeah, look, I know we're supposed to be talking about rugby, but I'm actually running a pizza delivery business here from my attic, which is why I always wear this headset. So we'll have to make this rugby chat pretty snappy, actually.
Yeah, Understood. Play 2-1-2, Keith. Now we're looking at a triple crown. I don't think anyone was expecting that after the Scotland game.
Well, they weren't. But I remember when I played against England, actually, and I got man of the match too. I was captain as well. I scored a try as well, actually. So
Just how good or bad are England, Keith? You know, they lost to an in-form France in the first game and then just pipped Scotland in a blizzard. So hard to tell where they're at currently.
Well, I'd say that's probably a fair point, but I'm not going to give you any credit for saying it, actually, because you didn't actually play rugby at a high level. And in general, I find talking to anyone who hasn't played international rugby tedious, actually. And that's why I spend most of my time in this attic, getting away from irritating ordinary people and getting pizza delivered to them on my headset.
OK, speaking of irritating and tedious, Eddie Jones is on the line. Eddie, thanks a million for joining us. From an Irish perspective, of course, we travelled to Twickenham with a triple crown at stake. Does that up the ante?
Mate, there's no ante to be upped, unless we're talking about something else, mate. Yeah, look, we're playing the Irish, mate. We hate the bloody Irish. Can't stand the buggers.
Is that just gentle ribbing because of the rivalry that exists with Ireland? Or another example of banter, that's banter in association with...
Ah, there's no rivalry, mate. We just pretty much smashed them every time we played, and we just hate the Irish.
You didn't smash Ireland in the Grand Slam game in 2018, did you? So stick that in your pipe. That's pipes in association with Wavin pipes. Make the right connection with Wavin.
You're all just stinky and smelly, and we're going to get you because we're going to be the best side ever to play the game, ever. There.
Eddie, look, I've got to leave it there. Thanks a million for joining us. It's great to have you on the show. And in fairness, you know, your success is well deserved. It's just a pity you're a bit of a bollocks.
Yeah, whatever, mate.
Thanks, guys. That went well. How's my voice? How's my voice sounding? Okay? Yeah. Smooth? Yeah, I really am smooth. That's why I won all the radio awards, you know, because my smooth voice. Apart from when Nathan won it, the bastard.
Richard's Rugger thing.
On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The full back catalogue, by the way, is up on offtheball.com. And if you want to split your sides for a period of time, I recommend going up there and to check it out. Just good to not be on it on, I suppose, for a week.
Feels good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My Twitter mentions not hopping this week.
Kevin Donoghue wonders on YouTube, what am I listening to? Ireland are going to win by a minimum of 9 points. That's the sort of...
This is the sort of confidence I've been building
optimism.
All week. And, I mean, I'm sure... I was looking at those odds before the Makhu-Vunipola news, so that changes things considerably as well.
Right. You have an update on that, or just it does?
Well, of course, he's like he would have made my joint England Ireland 15 earlier in the week. Makhu-Vunipola. Let's not forget that.
Oh, you went all Roy Keane, did you?
I went all Roy Keane. Was it the morning after Roy Keane and all? But yeah, like he's one of the best loose heads in the world. So to suggest that his absence is not going to be a big factor is ridiculous. So actually, you know what? I like the confidence that's coming through on the text machine today.
Very good.
And it's building towards something legitimate, hopefully.
9:18 on this Friday morning. We have a few outstanding bits to get to from our pick five of the morning, including the retirement of Dan Toohey being one of them, the former Ireland forward, obviously 130-odd appearances for Ulster as well, and a mainstay of Irish rugby for so many years, has decided to call time in his career and has issued a very long statement on Twitter that is more of a refrain about the state of rugby in 2020 than it really is about anything else. He's had some a fairly horrific injury picked up on the pitch and has had to retire from the game. So, yeah, it's worth going up. Yeah, head along to offtheball.com and you can check out the full piece that's up there. He's saying he... The headline that's certainly been taken out of the piece by us and by several others as well is definitely in relation to that rotten from the core line in relation to rugby. He doesn't really go into a huge amount of detail much more beyond that, other than to give great detail about his own personal experience and the trauma that he's been through. He's not looking for people to be in touch with him afterwards, and he isn't doing it for vanity reasons, as so often these things happen where players, you know yourself, they're chasing the likes on. It doesn't feel like Dan Toohey is, in fact he's not, he's most specifically not doing that to the letter of his very lengthy statement. But anyway, he's had to retire, he's in his mid-30s and has been spent the last couple of seasons in the Pro D2 in France, which will be a pretty sweet way to wind down. But as he says himself, he didn't get the send-off that he'd wanted, where you would have your family and friends around and everybody knows it's your last game and you have a few beers afterwards. It did not come about in that fashion, and he's spent the last, whatever, 17 maybe number of weeks in the French season kicking up his heels, and did an interview with French TV yesterday. It doesn't even seem like all the retirement was particularly planned. Did an interview with French TV, question came up and he said, yeah, it doesn't look like I'm going to be back, and so the news is out.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear what he has to say in his retirement statement. It's not all a kind of a riding off into the sunset sort of moment for him. He's calling the sport out, basically, afterwards. And I wonder if that's exacerbated by existing in French rugby for a while, or whether or not he means it in an overall sense.
The overall sense was the tone that I got from it. Anyway, but well worth a read. Head along to offtheball.com and you can check that out. Liverpool need to play with number 10. They need to sign themselves number 10. We probably have covered that already with Gary. And then the thing that we've been teasing people forward with all morning on.
What is this?
So this is you having watched every single game that happened in the Europa League last night and now informing our audience so that they can go about their business and pretend to be experts when they run into Frank or Susan in the office a bit later on.
So you're leaning at the water cooler later on, and the subject of Club Brugge versus Manchester United comes up. What do you say? You say to your mate, well, what was Mino Raiola doing signing Jesse Lingard? That will absolutely knock it out of the ballpark. Next fixture, if Ludo Goretz versus Inter Milan comes up at the water cooler today, what you say to your mate is, God, Bulgaria, tough place to go. Not for Christian Eriksen and Romelu Lukaku, though. Great finishes by the lads last night.
You finish that with a couple of pistols?
No, pistols all the way throughout.
All the way throughout,
if you can maintain a sentence while slowly doing the pistol.
I'm with you.
That's the ideal situation. If, for some reason, you're at the water cooler and Eintracht Frankfurt against Red Bull Salzburg comes up, you can use one or two things. You can say, God, Haaland, a big loss. Mm. Or you can say, well, one good win for Red Bull this week, am I right? That could be another applicable situation. I can go through all the fixtures if you want.
Give us a couple more. I'm all for it, yeah.
You can
maybe some more likely fixtures that might come up.
Well,
you
obviously had Copenhagen against Celtic last night. If you wanted, like, you could say great draw for Celtic in Copenhagen last night. Or if you wanted to look extra intellectual, you could say great draw for Celtic in Copenhagen last night. And then at the water
cooler. Schopenhagen, actually, I think is the colloquialism.
Well, we can go with that either. That'll just bring you up to level three. Some actual fixtures.
Was it a good result?
An away goal.
Yeah.
Penalty saved.
They'd be expected to beat whatever you're having yourself.
They would be expected to progress.
They're going to get it done. Water cooler wise, it'll be fine.
Bring the tie back home is the official water cooler phrase. Obviously, Arsenal away to Olympiacos. We basically gave you all the water cooler talk for that earlier on.
It was too in depth earlier on.
Bukayo Saka.
Arteta's hit. He's struck on something here. He stumbled upon something. Aubameyang wide on the left. Leave him there.
It's a good shout. Tough night for Martinez not getting the nod ahead of Leno on goals would be expert water cooler talk. And then the middling water cooler talk would be Bakayo Saka. He's got wheels, I think is the phrase you want to use around your colleagues this
morning.
Hopefully
we can hang on to him, that sort of thing.
Exactly, if you are of an Arsenal disposition. And then, of course, you've got to talk about Ruben Neves' goal to anybody who's in your general vicinity tonight. What a chest, what a finish, a couple of the lines you could use. And Thiago Jota overshadowed, despite the fact that he scored a hat-trick. And then Rangers.
Stuff like don't head the ball to Ruben Neves, that sort of guff.
I tweeted that, so you can't use that.
Oh, right, just that.
That's copyright.
All right, yeah.
Absolutely don't. Trademark. Don't dare take my takes. And then Rangers.
Pistols all day long. That's I love it. This could be a new, I think there's a new slot. Yeah. Do you think, Tommy? Tommy's not even listening, but I think it's a good slot. We're coming back to this again.
Great, so we'll see you next Friday, yeah?
It'll be a Friday feature. Tommy's in agreement. 9:24 on this Friday morning. That is it from our pick five for this Friday morning. And we still have a few little bits and pieces to come. We're going to give you an update on where we're all at with our Swim for a Mile challenge. That's on the way after these. OTB AM. All right, Off the Ball are taking part in the Swim for a Mile Challenge. It's supporting Templestowe Children's University Hospital Foundation, and the challenge has been created by Swim Ireland, the national governing body for swimming, diving and water polo. Swimming is a great alternative when you're suffering from an injury, particularly in the lower extremities, as athletes frequently return to swimming to maintain their fitness levels during injury. Swimming also helps you stay in shape and can challenge the body to work in ways that it wouldn't normally. Tommy Rooney, good morning to you.
Morning, lads. How are we?
It also helps, like, sedate people like myself, get off their arses and do a bit of exercise.
Yeah.
I haven't done a huge amount. I've got into a bit of detail this week about, I've had an extraction, Tommy. I'm sure you were listening earlier on, but I had a tooth out. Yeah. So I'm using that as an excuse.
You've lost part of yourself.
I have lost a section of myself. Legitimately or not, I've used that as an excuse. I went on Monday, and that's been it for the week. I don't feel great about it.
Well, let's just actually lay all our cards on the table here. For anybody who doesn't know, Adrian Barry swam 750 metres in open water as part of a triathlon last year. So he is miles ahead of everybody else.
No.
So this guff about only training one day a week is exactly what it is. Guff.
We've seen you in the pool, Adrian.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what you're doing.
No, but...
You do know what you're doing.
You lasted in the open water.
How many of us are doing this swim? Eight, nine?
About eight.
Eight?
Yeah.
So where... I'll be honest now with this response. Where do I sit in the...
Pantheon of greats.
Like you're, on that 1-8.
You're in the top lane. There's two lanes. We're splitting into two lanes.
But hang on a second. There are seven people in one lane and one person in another lane.
That's not true.
So you can't make that comparison. Where do I sit on the 1-8? Be honest.
Like I was doing single arm
Stop
strokes.
Avoiding the question.
Last week. Where do you sit?
You're
in the top four. And that's where you want to be.
Probably five, maybe six.
I would say the power rankings goes like this. Number four, Adrian Barry. Number three, Enda Coll. Number two, Gerard Gilroy. Number one, Tom Malone.
I think that your top three...
That's good. I like accurate. That. Like, Nathan's pushing you, but like...
I think you're ahead of me. I think Nathan's ahead of me.
I have a massive problem with technique. And we have a really, really good coach, Pete Conway. Mm. And he's
Pete
been kind of breaking in all my bad habits over the last couple of weeks.
What have they been, Tommy?
Drowning halfway through a length.
Right, that's a bad habit.
Terrible habit.
Not leaving my arms out while I'm putting my stroke through. I find myself that my arms at times halfway through a length they'll just be redundant. Like I'm just and halfway through my length I'm thinking, why the hell isn't my left arm pushing through the length enough? And next thing I start drowning and I can't breathe properly. And yeah, I've been struggling because I did swim a bit when I was younger, like transition year and stuff. Like all of us, we've done bits and pieces, but technique was just horrendous.
Can I just say Owen Sheehan's progress over the last how many weeks have we been at it?
It's five, I think.
It's a couple of days.
Has been nothing short, genuine point here, nothing short of unbelievable.
But that's nonsense though. Like it's been something very short of unbelievable. I can swim a length.
That is, from where you were coming from, honestly, you're not going to accept this.
I swam when I was a kid as well, I just forgot how to do it.
Yeah,
I walked in
ago.
All confident, I was like, come on Pete, yeah.
You didn't walk in all confident.
Send me down the lane there.
His email was pretty confident.
What was my email?
Your level of competency. Remember Jared asked us all to send us an email of our level of competency.
And what did you say?
I can't remember what I said. I was like, send me in there, coach. Send me down the lane. And I was like, he was just like, okay, everybody go up to the other end. And I was like, oh God, this is, I've kind of like.
Babe, I can't swim.
I was doggy paddling down the outside end. And I kind of looked up and I was like, oh my God, 2-point-something meters here. I was like, that is much taller than I am. This is going to end in certain death. But I managed to survive that. And
essentially,
here I am to tell the tale.
On Wednesday, there was only myself, yourself and Jer who turned up. Like, we're there. You know, Adrian's already
keep showing up.
He wasn't there. But Pete was giving the point, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, that first day you hopped into the pool, he walked about 5 metres up and he said, this is how far Owen got. And Owen was doing 50 metres on Wednesday. But you were doing 50 metres on Wednesday.
But my
you jumped 10 times.
My favourite moment of this whole thing so far was that, like, I did honestly go in there thinking, I can swim a little bit. And Stephen Doyle comes over to me in one of our first training sessions and he's like, oh, that's pretty cool, man. You're coming from having done no swimming in your life whatsoever. And like, well, actually, I thought I did. But clearly my technique was so bad, it was obvious to the rest. But still going, like, now going from 50 metres to a mile, that is a challenge over the next few weeks. We've all got busy lives as well.
Absolutely.
I think your level of progression tops anything anybody else has done down there. I think it's been brilliant.
In fairness, we've been blessed.
You better keep at it.
We're blessed by the coaching we're getting. Like, when something is broken down in such a simple way that you can understand what you're doing completely wrong, because, like, so many of us have bad habits from swimming. Jerry was telling me how he broke through. One thing clicked in his head and hit the progression that he's made in the space of a week or so just because he's doing one small thing right. it makes a massive difference. So I'm hoping that breakthrough moment comes for me in the next couple of weeks.
I've only ever heard you use that level of hyperbole about somebody, and it was
Leinster.
Actually, yeah, it was Leinster Rugby. So
we were always going to go there.
Well, I'm happy as Larry now after you said that. Possibly the best genuine, progression ever.
Genuine point.
Need to tweet that.
Genuine. That us?
That is us.
People can head along to swimformile.com where you're going to find more information on participating pools and their training information to partake in that Swim for Mile challenge. We'll keep you updated on exactly how we're getting on. I don't know, we haven't actually set a date, have we?
I think it's mid-April. I think there's an actual date for it. Oof, I think right. It's the 17th of April there, but yeah, 6 weeks. We're halfway through it next week.
Right.
So
back to the pool.
You know, we're clocking up those.
You're doing
numbers.
Much extra. This is one of the, like, those leaving cert lads who'd be like, I'm sure I'm doing nothing. I'm just out playing ball and then going home to do 5 hour study.
Two weekends ago, I did it. I go a bit down in Clare, but it was in an 18 meter pool. And yeah. I felt like I made a big jump. But the difference, it only sounds like a small thing, like, but I find myself now in the 25 meter pool in Trinity looking down and being like, where the hell am I? Why is there still 7 or 8 meters to go? So. You know, don't train yourself in the wrong length pool.
Technique is you've hit the nail on the head. Technique is key. Yeah. That's almost it from us on OTBM for the morning. Thanks for a million for joining us over the course of the show. We're going to be back on Monday morning. There'll be lots of reaction, of course, to the weekend sport. Off the ball back tonight from 7 o'clock. We're going to have Friday night racing. Graeme Sinise as well from our roadshow during the week. You can listen to OTB Sports Radio as well, our sports radio station, right throughout the day. It's over at offtheball.com/radio, or you can pick it up as well on the Go Loud app. If you missed anything this morning, subscribe to the OTBM podcast. It's fully time stamped as well, so it makes it really easy if you want to just go and pick out what it is you want specifically from the show. You can find it as well on YouTube, and you can cast the show to your smart TV from that. Of course, this morning we had Ronan O'Gara, we had Alan Quinlan and all the weekend Six Nations, football in the company of Gary Breen, our top five picks as well, and the sports pages and much more besides. OTBM is Ireland's first and only sports breakfast show. We're here weekday mornings from 7:30. Enjoy your weekend. Good morning.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.